Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. Yay! I'm back from vacation. This show was recorded Saturday, September 30th, 2017. A little programming note. I know many of you listen to our shows on your Amazon devices, your Echoes, and you still can listen. All you have to do, for instance, is say, hey, Echo, listen to the Tech Guy on TuneIn, and you'll be able to play it back. You can even listen as we do the show live, which is every Saturday and Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern time. All you have to do is say, hey, Echo, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn. That's our live stream. In fact, you can do that anytime. There's always something playing. But a little bit of a change, YouTube has dropped the Echo show. So you used to be able to watch us as well if you had an Echo with a screen. That doesn't work anymore. So I apologize for that. We're working out some other way for you to be able to watch. But you can always listen on your Echo. This is a little programming note. This is episode 1426. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. To learn more about fiber optic download speeds on a smartphone, go to snapdragon.com/gigabit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and Apple Watches and virtual reality G-Jaws and all that jazz. 8888, Ask Leo is the number. 8888, I say that so fast just to drive you crazy. 888-827-5536, toll free, anywhere from the U.S. or Canada. 888-827-5536, outside that area, you know, you can use Skype out and call that number and it's still free to use. You can also reach us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv, or what else? How else can you reach us? Oh, on the website, techguylabs.com. I'm a little blurry because I'm jet-lagged. I just got back from vacation. Thank you very much, very heartily, to Rich DeMuro, who filled in for me last week and did a great job. And I'm told that he talked all about the iPhone 8, right? And the iPhone X, and well, no one has an X, so we're not any farther along with that. But at least we have 8s now, right? And the Note 8, we don't have to talk about that anymore, right? He talked about the Experian hack. Don't have to talk about that anymore, right? let's see. Is there anything that we didn't anything that happened this? Did anything happen while I was gone? I do not have the new Apple Watch yet. I know a lot of people do. I'm getting mine tomorrow. I was on vacation and I had to decide. Everybody's going through this right now. Everybody uses Apple stuff. Well, should I buy? What should I do? Should I stick with my existing iPhone? Should I get the new iPhone? Should I wait because there's going to be an iPhone in October? What should I do? What should I do? And I guess the I had that same thing, and except I'm traveling, and I'm thinking, well, should I buy the 8? Should I wait? 8 or wait? That's the question. And I have to buy it because I have to review it, right? So I bought an iPhone 8. I bought a white one. My wife bought a space gray one. And my colleague Megan got a gold one. So we have all three colors we can look at. The only one with a black front is the space gray one. But really, I'm sitting here looking at this, nearly $1,000 phone that I bought. And I'm looking at it and I'm looking at my old phone. I'm thinking, what did I, why? what is this? So, but I said this last year, if you have a, if it really is the case, I think, is you wait a couple of years before you upgrade, right? Wait a couple of years. Don't upgrade every year. That's silly. Only people, crazy people do that. And even maybe 3 or 4 years. Then you, if you are using an iPhone 6 or an iPhone 5, the iPhone 8 would be a massive improvement. It's got the dual sensor camera, much better camera. Not more megapixels. I guess it's a new sensor and it does some interesting new things. And there's, you know, there's little details that camera buffs or geek fanatics pay attention to, like the fact that the second lens now has optical image stabilization, whereas it didn't on the 7. It's a faster processor, although I don't know, when you use your phone, do you feel like it's sluggish? The only time I ever feel like any iDevice is sluggish is if I'm playing a game that's doing a lot of calculations, there's a lot going on, you know, a lot of players and stuff. Sometimes then it hesitates a little bit, unless you have the newer models. Although I'm hearing some people upgraded to iOS 11, the new version of the Apple operating system for iPhones and iPads, and they're starting to say, there's a number of people say, oh, it's so much slower on my old phone. So maybe Microsoft used to do that, right? The new version of Windows would come out and you'd say, oh, I need a new PC. What else? What else happened? What did you do? I'm curious. How many people? I have to say, when I went online to buy the iPhone, and I did it minutes after the, but not even minutes, maybe a half hour after the availability began at midnight Pacific time. It was easy. In years past, it's been hard, right? You go in and you wait. You have to keep hitting the button. Nothing happens. This year, it was like, boom, okay, you got it. Anything else we can do for you? Oh. Which is completely an unofficial metric that maybe this wasn't, you know, the hottest iPhone ever. There are some metrics. There's a company called Slice. A lot of people use it. I use it to keep track of incoming packages and stuff. And Slice gets not from Apple. Nobody, Apple's not telling anybody. We won't hear anything from Apple. We'll hear in 3 months from Apple, it was the fastest selling iPhone since the last fastest selling iPhone, something like that. 50% faster than some other time or something like that. But I think the Slice information is a little more useful because they have, I can't remember what it was, some 50,000, some large number of users. So statistically accurate or valid. And they said sales are down a lot. Like half as much as last year. Why? Well, because people are saying, well, I want the latest iPhone, and that's going to be out in October, or you can pre-order in October, October 27th through November 3rd. So they say, I'm just going to wait. So now the question is, well, okay, 7 or 8, or should you wait for X? By the way, it is 10, iPhone 10, but no one says 10. Do you say 10? No, it's iPhone X. I told Apple this. I said, don't call it the iPhone 10. Everybody say it's the iPhone X, and they do, the X. So I'm going to call it the X. I don't care. I know it's wrong. You wait for the X. There's some interesting articles coming out. Nobody has the X. Nobody has the X yet. But people saw it at the event. That's it. About this little notch at the top. Like some people just really say, this is ugly. What is going on? And is the X that much better? Well, it's got an OLED screen and it's a bigger screen. But is it really better? Is it a lot better? Is it $100 better? And you got to wait. And maybe you won't even get it this year because now the latest is the components. There's two components that are critical components for the face recognition. And one of them is delayed, and maybe Apple won't be able to make these in quantity until maybe next year. And they're twinsies. It's like frickin' frack or something, these two. What is it? I told you I'm a little jet lagged. What is it? There's two components, and apparently one of them is delayed. You got your frick and you got your frack. No, there's something else. Oh, Romeo and Juliet. I like frickin' frack better. Romeo and Juliet. The iPhone X production woe, according to the Wall Street Journal, it's pretty well connected on this, sparked by Juliet and her Romeo, imbalance with modules fuels concern about widespread sales shortages. So now, do you wait or do you get the 8? You know what the smartest thing to do, unless you really hate your phone or you dropped it or you flushed it down the toilet or something, just don't buy anything. Your phone's fine. But I think the real reason people are waiting for the X is because that's the one that's visibly different. If you look at the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 7, they look the same. But if you get the X, now status symbol, especially if it's hard to get. It's almost as if Apple created this whole thing. Like, it's going to be super rare, super, super hard to get. Man, the status you'll have when you sit down at that big dinner, for the business, and you're wearing, you're all dressed up and everything, and you pull out your iPhone X and you slap it on the table. Man, now you're something. That's why these things sell. I'm convinced. Hey, let's take some calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, it feels good to be back. It does feel good to be back. Sometimes, you go on vacation and you go, I don't want to go back to work. But see, my job, I get used to people listening to me talk, and they don't interrupt me or anything, and it spoils me. Now, I just think I can't wait to get back and I can talk without anybody interrupting me.
Didn't happen on vacation, huh?
No.
You had a lot of interruptions?
Yeah. People didn't just sit raptly and listen to me. So now I'm glad to be back. And I have your full attention. It was fun. One person recognized me. That was nice.
Really?
Yes.
Where?
Actually, two people. One person on the tour that I was on.
Okay.
We're talking, and Diane sidles up and says, "Are you the tech guy?" I said, "Yes." She said, "I heard you talking, your voice." Somebody had asked me, we were talking about iPhones, of course, or cameras or something. And she said, "I heard you." I was busted. And then, weird, another one, I'm just sitting in a small town in France, and some guy comes up, Pascal, hi, Pascal, and says, you, he just stood there staring.
he was nervous.
It was weird, because he just stood there looking at me, and I thought, either I've got,
something
patisserie on my face, or he knows me. And he said, "Are you Leo Laporte?" And I said, "I am Leo Laporte. How are you?"
And what country were you in when the lady recognized you?
The whole thing was in France. I was in France the whole time. Anyway, Kim, how are you? How'd it go with Rich last week? He's great, isn't he?
Yeah. It's easy on the eyes.
A little too good. I heard he's a good looking fella.
He is.
Can't tell on the radio. On the radio, I could be just as good looking. You don't know.
But I feel like he was a baby, but he had a big brain too. So
yeah,
I
Rich is great.
That's how you were.
Rich is great. He used to be at CNET. Yeah, one point when I was a young man, many, many years ago. Rich is great, and I appreciate him filling in for me. And you could see him if you're in the Los Angeles area. He's the tech guy on KTLA TV. And I think because all the ladies around here enjoyed him, he'll be back.
I told him come back.
Yeah, no, I think he got the invitation, and I think he will be back. You ever hear the story of Wally Pipp?
Who's Wally Pipp?
Yeah, that's what they say now. Who's Wally Pipp? He was a star first baseman for the New York Yankees in the 20s.
Oh, that's why I don't know him.
And he got, well, I'll tell you why you don't, really why you don't know him, because he got a headache one day, and he said, manager, to the manager, famous manager, I can't remember his name, I don't want to play today, I got a headache. So the guy said, all right, sit down. Hey, who's that? Who do we have? Oh, that kid who just came up, Lou, what's his name? Lou Gehrig, come here, Lou. And Lou played first base that day and never stopped playing first base for the New York Yankees. In fact, set a record for playing nonstop without taking a single day off for 17 years. And nobody knows who Wally Pipp was anymore.
Nope.
So I don't want to be a Wally Pipp. So my headache suddenly got better. As soon as I heard Rich, I came back.
I guess I'm the opposite of Wally Pipp, too. I never take a day off.
No, it's a dumb thing to do. You're just asking for trouble. So you've been, thank you for answering the phones all this time. And you've been answering phone calls, ready, lining them up for the show today.
I've been waiting for you to come back.
Thank you.
And so have people that have had
people
other questions that Rich maybe couldn't touch on. But Connor in Minneapolis has a really kind of complicated but interesting question, and I'll let him ask
good.
It.
Oh, so you saved it for me.
We saved the complicated ones for you.
Oh, thank you. I can't thank you enough. Thanks, Kim. Nice to be back. Nice to see you again.
See you.
Hi, Connor. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. So, yeah, it is a complicated one.
Uh-oh.
What do you know about VPNs? Are you big on VPNs?
I'm big on VPNs. I love the VPN. VPNs are great. Virtual private networks. People first became acquainted with them when they used them at work often, because when you wanted to get on the work network but you were at home, you couldn't just like log in. That would be dangerous, right? So they created
you
used to have to run software. You don't have to do it anymore, but run software in your computer that would let you log in to the works computer, and it was as if you were
Internet,
at work.
Yeah,
it was as if you were at work, and it was safe because, and this is what a VPN does, it gives you an encrypted tunnel. Think of it like a brick tunnel to go for your network traffic to go through, so no one can see what you're doing. And that actually turns out to be quite a useful feature, and it's one of the reasons people now use VPNs, not just at work, but all the time, to hide what they're doing from their internet service provider, from that guy, that strange guy sitting next to you at the coffee shop, to protect themselves online. So there you go. That's my definition. And now, what would you like to know about VPNs?
So what I would like to do is, at my home internet, I have Charter. And Charter is very, very strict when it comes to things you can watch and do outside of home of your home network.
This is not hard. This is really annoying to me, because internet service providers should be like a public utility. You know, the phone company.
Exactly.
The phone company doesn't say, "Well, you can make phone calls, but not to your grandmother." They don't say, the water company says, "Well, you can do anything you want with our water as long as you don't take a bath in it." They don't get to tell you what you can do. But internet service providers, which as far as I'm concerned are utilities, somehow want this permission to tell you what you can do with your internet connection. Worse, they want to be able to slow down traffic from competitors. In fact, they've appealed to the Supreme Court. You know, the FCC is dealing with this. We call it net neutrality. The FCC has said they're going to repeal net neutrality. But now the ISPs have gone to the Supreme Court of the United States saying, we would like to be able to tell people what to do when they're on the internet. And Charter is one of them. Verizon, AT&T, they're some of the worst offenders. Comcast. So you want to use a VPN so that Charter can't tell you what to do.
Exactly. Well, I want to be able to, when I'm outside of my home, I can't watch any of my, you can't even watch, say, CNN, for example, when you're outside of home. You can only watch.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Okay. That's not Charter's fault. The reason they do that is because CNN demands that. They say, well, you have to be, you know, a subscriber. Yeah, you have to be a subscriber. The problem here is that content creators like HBO and CNN, who would love to go directly to you, they don't want to have to go through a cable company. But right now, they're dependent on the cable companies for access. And the cable company said, do not, whatever you do, go over the top. That's called over the top, behind our backs.
Yep.
And so it's not really Charter's fault. It is in a way. It's all of the cable company's fault. It's the way CNN does it. So you want to trick CNN into thinking when you're at a hotel somewhere that you're actually at home.
Exactly.
That's kind of the opposite way that people – that's the opposite of how people normally use a VPN. Normally people will use a VPN service and they're at a coffee shop. They'll log into that, the point being that no one at the coffee shop can see them. Yeah. So you – to do this, you need
– watch a lot of TV.
Yeah, I understand. To do this, you need to run your own VPN server.
Correct.
At home.
Correct.
And that is a little trickier, but not impossible. Some routers have these built in. The open source program that most people use is called OpenVPN.
OpenVPN.
Yep. So you can run that if you have a server. But easier to run it on a router. Hang on for a second. We've got to take a break. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guy, is coming up. But I'll talk to you off the air. Give you the deets. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's a really interesting, a different way of using a VPN, and I like it.
Exactly. Well, when we had Xfinity, they were very, you know, you could do anything. You can watch every single channel. Yeah.
So the issue could be that Charter probably, almost certainly, prevents you from running servers on your Charter connection. So
probably.
If they see
from the beginning,
yeah, if they see that you're running a server, an email server, a web server, a VPN server, what could happen? They could block it because it uses special ports. Although you don't have to use standard ports.
Yeah. Okay.
But they can still see its VPN traffic.
182?
Yeah, I mean, usually what the VPN port is, you can use whatever you want. Often what people will do is use a port that Charter can't block, like the SSL port or the but that's tricky too. You need to be fairly sophisticated. I think the easiest way to do this is to get a router that supports OpenVPN. Many do, and they become the server.
Yep.
And then you log into it.
The network, what is it? The Netgear, Nighthawk, AC1900.
Perfect. That's a great solution.
Which I know is the exact one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're running it now on that. So you run it on the Nighthawk. Choose a port and see what happens. Charter may start blocking inbound traffic on that port. What they want you to do is buy a business account. If you're going to run a server, they generally say to you, oh, yeah, that's not for home users, but that's...
it's for business.
It's for business, and you pay extra for a business account. That's one possibility. They may not notice, you know, and don't use the traditional ports. And then it'll work just fine. And actually, this is a very good use for it, because then, let's see, so you log into your VPN, you're on the router... You know, the problem, and then you're going to go, okay, so now you're going to use your computer at home, and you're going to be logged into it over remote access, and then you're going to fire up Netflix or whatever on that home computer and watch it. Here's where you get in trouble now is it's going to, there's bandwidth overhead. So for streaming video, this sometimes doesn't work real well.
That is true. With the IIR with live TV, and normally you need like a certain, it's not too much, but then again, it kind of gets to the point of there is a limit or a minimum limit where you want to make sure it's not going to buffer, continuously.
The only way to do this, since you already have the Nighthawk, the only way to do it is try it and see what happens. And you may have to, fiddle with the ports because Charter won't want you to run a server, but they won't necessarily know if you don't use standard ports, that kind of thing.
All right.
Hey, good luck.
Give that a shot.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
You already have the tools you need.
I'll keep you updated.
All right.
Exactly.
Yeah, please do. Let me know how that works. Take care.
Yeah, we'll do. Absolutely. You too. Bye-bye.
Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo.
How you doing? How'd it go last week?
Oh, went fine.
Good.
Rich did a great job.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting sick of saying nice things about him, though. I got to tell you. No, I don't care.
Yeah, we talked about the new Apple TV.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I wish I'd heard that. So we found out it does do HDR and Dolby 10, or Dolby Vision, rather.
Dolby Vision and HDR 10.
HDR 10 and Dolby Vision. So that's the good news.
Yep. However,
It
upscales everything.
I know. That's really bad news.
Which is kind of bad news. Yeah. I would certainly rather have
Let your TV do that. Yeah, or some other device do that. Yeah. That's
all they need to do is add a native option.
So typical of Apple to say, no, we'll handle everything. We know how to do it best. But what do you want to talk about today?
Let's see. I've got I just wrote a piece a little while ago asking the question, is 8K around the corner?
All right. I love it. Hang on. Here we go. Bump de bump. Bump de bump. You know what that means? That magic music means one thing and one thing only. That is, it's time for Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru. He is Editor-in-Chief of the AVS Forum at AVS.com, host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast. Hello, Scotty.
Hey, Leo. Welcome back.
Nice to be back. I hear that last week you talked a little bit about the new 4K Apple TV.
Yeah, that was pretty big news.
Yeah. Thank goodness it came out. There are caveats, and I know you talked about it last week. Yep. But now that I've got a 4K TV and I've got my 4K Roku, my 4K Apple TV, my 4K Chromecast, my 4K AV receiver, my 4K Android Shield TV, and my 4K, I think that's everything. Now that I have all of that, and by the way, I saw somebody did some calculations that 13% of his content was only 13% of his content today was 4K available to him. And
that
and of that, only about half was HDR. But I have the setup now.
Yep.
When do we have to get to 8K?
Well, you know, I wrote a piece on AVS Forum last week asking, is 8K around the corner? Because I saw an article that from Display Daily that basically said, yeah, it's around the corner. And I have to disagree. It is in a certain sense. It is in the sense that once again, the TV manufacturers are starting to talk about building 8K TVs. Now, we should say that 8K is four times the number of pixels from 4K.
HD.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So it would be 16 times higher HD. Resolution than your current HD TV.
Yep.
Wow.
And so the TV manufacturers are starting to talk about this. They've shown them for several years. You've seen them at CES. I think we were together when we saw a tech demonstration of a Sharp TV that was 8K, and it was showing special custom shot 8K footage. And everybody went, ooh, ah, how great that is. And so now we're starting to hear from Samsung and Sharp, particularly, that they're starting to talk about 8K LCD TVs. And the reason they can do that is that it doesn't really cost them very much. To increase the pixel count in an LCD TV is relatively easy. By contrast,
because it's such a mature technology.
It's a mature technology. They know how to do it. They have their fab, their manufacturing facilities called fabs that can be pretty much easily upgraded to do it. OLED TVs, by contrast, it would take a lot more effort to do.
Yeah.
Now, the problem that I think the LCD TV manufacturers have seen is that OLED really is kind of taking off. It's becoming sort of the gold standard of the high-end TV market. And it's not even that high-end anymore. LG introduces OLED TVs and then drops the prices dramatically. And they've done that every year. And
so there's less pressure with the current technology to go to 8K than there might have been back when we were all LCD with HD.
Well, that's true, except that the companies that don't produce OLEDs, that is Samsung and Sharp, have said, how can we make a differentiation between us and OLED? And their idea is, well, a bigger number in the specs must be better. People will think it's better. And they do. The general public does think that higher resolution is better.
This is too bad. We are really, you know, I thought we'd outgrown this with the megahertz myth and PCs. And then now then you get, you know, GPUs, and then you get resolution is crazy. We just are number crazy. And I think part of that is because it's an easy way to judge between devices.
Yeah.
It seems
not necessarily a good way.
It's not a good way, but it seems to be objective. You can look at two numbers. You can say, well, that's bigger. That's better. A bigger number is always a better number. But we know it's not true. It isn't always a better number.
And I mean, you know, 8K certainly is better in the sense of you can walk up and put your nose on the TV and not see the pixels. But who does that?
Nobody's going to
Well, the author of this story says that people do that in retail environments. They actually do. But when you get it home and you set it up, you're sitting 10 feet away, you're not going to see the difference between 4K and 8K.
That's interesting. So we need to have a little rope, a little velvet rope, keeping people away from the TV in the store so they don't get the misapprehension that they're getting something
better. The other problem is that what about content? Are we going to see 8K content?
Well, here's a really interesting question. Before you even get to that, we don't even have 4K on broadcast yet.
No, we don't. That's coming in the form of the next generation of over-the-air broadcasting called ATSC 3.0.
And how long is that going to be?
Well, that's not even completely finalized yet. There were, you know, it's close, but it's not done.
But do so we're broadcasters not have to get new equipment? Yeah, they have to get new TV, new cameras, new.
Yes. The answer is yes.
And so the analog here is the move from standard definition to high definition. We've gone through this before, and then you can even compare this to the high definition to 4K if you're talking about 8K. But if you're talking about 4K broadcast, it took them a long time to get an HD broadcast.
That's right.
It always happens in Japan first. NHK is already doing 8K streams.
Correct. And they are going to do 8K broadcasts from satellite, actually, of the Olympic Games. They're hoping to do it for the 2018 games in Korea, close to Seoul, I think. And that certainly for the 2020 games in Tokyo. And Korean Broadcasting System is working on this as well. And so, you know, there is going to be that little bit of 8K content. But for the rest of it, it's either going to be upscaled. The TV is going to upscale lower resolution content to that. One good application of an 8K TV is looking at your own photographs. Because, you know, your camera, your phone, for heaven's sakes, takes 8K and better resolution.
Really? A 12 megapixel sensor is an 8K resolution?
Well, 8K is...
What is 8K?
It's like 33 megapixels.
Okay. So your iPhone does not do...
No. Okay. 8K. Maybe not. But certainly most, reasonable cameras do.
Yeah. A good... Okay. Yeah. I would say a high-end digital camera can do that.
Sure. So that's one thing. I would say 8K is also useful in VR. If you can pack 8K resolution into these tiny little displays that you put in front of your eyes, that's a useful thing because the display is less than an inch from your eye.
Not that that's turning out to be a massive market either, by the way.
Well, that there is that. I think 8K TVs, we're going to see them at CES next year. We're going to see them.
Yeah.
But
Don't get all head up about it, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not getting real excited about
Broadcasts spent so much money to go into HD.
Yep.
Millions and millions per station.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine they're sitting there, just can't wait to go to 4K, let alone 8K.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they'll skip 4K. You know, if I were a broadcaster, I might do that. I might say, well, heck. Although there's not, I don't know of a lot of, there's 5K cameras. Does Red do an 8K?
Red does an 8K camera.
So you could get, and those aren't terribly expensive compared to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, compared to what the.
Broadcast camera used to cost $50,000. So, I mean.
Yeah, Reds are less than that. Certainly.
So they get some Red cameras. At least they'd be starting to be ready for it.
Yeah, but I talked to Rich Chernock, one of the head dudes of the ATSC 3.0, and I said, can ATSC do 8K? He goes, well, theoretically, yeah, but it's not really on the roadmap. I mean,
With technology. It's both faster than you expected and slower than you want it to be at the same time.
Isn't that weird?
Scott Wilkinson, read all about it. He has an article on 8K. Is it in your future? You'll find it at the AVS forums, avsforum.com, where he is the editor-in-chief. And he joins us each week to talk home theater. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson.
You bet.
More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All yours, Scotty. All yours. You got time to stick around?
I'm Scott.
Oh, yeah. Sure do.
Oh, good.
Somebody here, I just saw a comment a little bit that the 8K Red is actually more than 50K. That may be. I honestly don't know.
But they'll come down if that's the case.
They will. They always do.
Yeah. They're very tech forward.
They are. Yeah. They are. It's no question about it. So anyway, CO Bra says, Leo, remember 8K content can always be downgraded to 4K. Well, but this is my point. There is no 8K content. There isn't going to be for a long time. UHD Blu-ray doesn't support 8K. It would require a new disc format to do 8K, and that ain't going to happen anytime soon.
We just got the 4K format.
I know. It's only the displays, the LCD displays in particular, that are going to be 8K first. And this was sort of what happened with 4K.
Yeah.
We saw the displays first.
And by the way, that was 3D that drove that, because for the 3D cameras, they needed dual HD displays, the 3D displays. Right. And I bet you that 4K VR is driving 8K, because you'd need dual 4K displays for VR.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So it could very well be.
But those are much smaller panels generally.
Very much smaller, yeah.
Because they fit on your head. Yeah.
Yeah, right. But they are super close to your eyeball. So it's like those people who go into a Best Buy or whatever and, you know, put their nose up against the screen.
Yeah. Your nose is actually up against the screen.
Your nose is actually up against the screen in VR. Yeah. Exactly so. So it's the TV manufacturers once again playing the specsmanship game, which is kind of disgusting. I hate it too.
Well, but we drive them to it because that's how we shop.
Well, yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're buying a projector, you say, well, how many lumens?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And of course, you can't compare. That's another example of the specsmanship folly, which is you cannot compare apples to apples. Epson's rating of lumens versus JVC's ratings of lumens versus Sony's ratings of lumens. They're all measured differently.
Yeah.
And so they're not comparable.
Somebody asked me when we're going to 8K. We actually discussed whether we should go to 1080p and decided not to.
What do you mean?
For Twit.
Oh.
We're going to stay 720p. We're 720p. Yeah. And we're going to it would be so costly. We'd have to buy all new chain, everything, new everything. So we're just to go HD, just to go 1080p. Nobody wants 1080p podcasts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We go back to your calls on line four. It's Chris in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Chris.
Leo, Chris listening in Denver on the 50,000-watt blowtorch KOA.
KOA. We love KOA.
Yeah, I got a lot of go Rockies, by the way.
I'm a Giants fan, so at this point, go ahead. Take it all, Rockies. We're out of it.
Yeah, there you go. My question is about Bixby. You know, I find the Google Voice works so much better. I don't know why Samsung attempted to do this. Is there a way to disable that button? Because I'll be listening to Spotify and I'll hit Bixby and then it shuts off the song and I want to blow a fuse.
Yeah. So there is a way now, just with the latest update. On the Note 8 and the S8, I presume you're using one of those, the ones with the hardware Bixby button. Yeah. It's kind of sad because, they dedicated a whole button to this. Bixby is a voice assistant, but it is not intended to replace Google's voice assistant because most of what Bixby does is internal to your phone. It opens apps. It does things in the apps. It's designed to kind of command your phone, but I agree with you. I don't find it that useful anymore. Supposedly in the Bixby, here it is. If you press your Bixby button and you've got the latest update on your S8, if you press the little gear, settings gear, a window will open. Whoops. Now I'm earning rewards with Bixby. I don't want to earn any more rewards with Bixby. If you press the gear, you'll see a little pop-up that says Bixby key. Open Bixby home when you press the Bixby key. You could turn that off. Now that means this button does nothing, which is, I guess, what you wanted, because you would turn up the volume, and instead of turning up or down the volume, you'd hit the Bixby button. I wish they would let us reassign it, though, to something else. But in any event, this solves your problem, which is open Bixby by pressing his little button, then press the gear and turn off the Bixby key. I'm really starting to wonder about these companies. At least there's still a headphone jack in the Galaxy S8 and the Note 8. At least Samsung hasn't done that. Apple's abandoned the headphone jack. And Google is apparently, they're going to have a big announcement this week, October 4th. What is that, Wednesday? Their new phones. And everybody agrees, and I think the rumors are accurate, there's not going to be a headphone jack on the new Google phone. It's exactly what Apple's done, I think, with the iPhone X, with its notch. At this point, phones are done. They're cooked. They can't really do that much to make them better or different or interesting. So now they're just adding dopey features to differentiate, like an extra button to launch an assistant no one wants. Or, hey, we've got courage. We're going to delete the headphone jack. Wow. I don't know how deleting, taking a hardware feature out is an improvement in any respect. And Apple still hasn't convinced me that. And by the way, if Samsung can manage to find the room in a very jam-packed Note 8 for a headphone jack, I don't see why Apple can't. So I don't buy that, oh, we needed the room. I don't buy that. It's just, it's a differentiator that isn't really an improvement or a differentiation in any way. What are they? It's a difference without a distinction, or is it a distinction without a difference? It's one of those. It drives me nuts. Next year, and maybe this will be the difference that'll change everything. Samsung's already said next year the Note 9, I guess they'll call it, will have a bendy display. It'll open up like a book. So your phone will have a display, no hinge in between. It's a bendy, flexible display. We know they can make those that will you'll pick up your phone and you'll open it up, and now it's double the size because it was folded over. That's a differentiator. Whether it's a good thing, we'll see. It may not be. But at this point, the smartphone industry is exactly the same position that the automobile industry was in by the 60s, maybe even the 50s, where there wasn't, you couldn't, what are you going to do? You put a bigger engine in? No, you add fins, you change the model design every year so that people go, oh, hey, that's so 1959. I want the 1960 Edsel, the one with fins. And that sells products. And I really believe that's where we are now. I don't think what Apple's done with this crazy screen with a notch in it, that's just fins. That's just designed to make people feel bad they don't have the latest and go out and spend $1,000 just so they have the one with fins. It's pure marketing, and I feel bad that we've fallen for it. Gosh, aren't there more? It seems like there are more important things to worry about. Anyway, the Bixby button, another example. You know, I like the Note 8. The Note 8 is almost a perfect phone. If they would dump the Bixby button, because there's no point in that, and they would put the fingerprint reader where it belongs, in the middle of the back, instead of right next to the camera, where I smudge it every time. It's a very poorly placed fingerprint sensor. I don't mind a fingerprint sensor. In fact, that's another thing. Apple's taking the fingerprint sensor away. Apple's decided the way to innovate with an iPhone is to take things out. A perfectly functional, really good, it works really well, the fingerprint sensor. You could put it on the back, Apple, and still have a giant screen. That's what Samsung's done. That's what Google's done. You could still have a giant screen. But no, they're dumping the fingerprint button because courage. We're going to do face recognition, and we'll see how well that works. But it seems like change without any real innovation, I guess, is what I would call it. It's just change for change's sake to make it look different so you'll buy the new one. Mike on the line from Burbank. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I've been watching you since your show in 1987.
Wow. I was 12 years old 30 years ago. No, I wish I were. Well, thank you. I appreciate your support all this time.
What I have is a friend of mine. Every time he goes on this one website, his computer crashes.
What?
And what I... But nowhere else. He can go any other site he wants to go on. I told him that every device that he uses has a separate IP address.
It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the content on the page at that site. It's, for some reason, breaking his browser. The browser is what's crashing. Best thing to do is reset the browser. Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Internet Explorer all have a reset command. You can Google it, reset name of browser here. And when you reset it, you're deleting all the history, the cookies, but most importantly, the cache. If that gets corrupted, then when you go back to that site, it tries to load the cache, it crashes. Chances are that's what's going on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I like the question, though. Where do IP addresses come from? It doesn't have anything to do with that. It has to do with the content of the page crashing the browser. And if the browser crashes bad enough, it even crashes the computer.
The first thing to do,
yeah?
Stop going to that site.
Yeah, don't go to that site. Whatever that site is, stop it. Stop it.
Hey, look. This is probably junk. Do you need to look at that?
I wish I were going to the Geffen Playhouse. We went to a show there once 2 years ago, and I guess I'm on there. Where's my Webby, by the way? Oh, good. October 27th. Should we enter the Webbies again? We won last year. Shouldn't I have a Webby by now?
Seems like it.
Oh, this is just, they just want money. Not even a calendar. Oh, I almost bought a mole. Yeah, I have a bad, I have a problem. Oh, I'm using Scott's time. Let's not use Scott's time. Let's let Scott, who's been very patiently sitting there. You've been to the Geffen Playhouse. That's a nice theater. I like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, if I lived down your way, I would be a member.
Hmm. Hey, it's your show. You want to take my time? That's totally fine.
No. It's your show right now. All yours.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, we've actually been talking, me and Robert Bigelow and Rusty Bones and Emily the Strange and Sybil, all about Star Trek. Because we're all Trekkers.
Did you watch the new one?
I haven't yet. I've been so involved in the High Holidays, which end today.
Lashana Tova.
Lashana Tova. We had a wonderful performance last night, which is...
did you play the shofar?
I did. I blew the shofar. We really raised the roof with that one. I've actually implemented something new and unorthodox. So you Orthodox Jews out there, I apologize. But... I actually have a crew of shofar blowers, and we all blow together, and we do it in surround sound.
Wow.
I have them placed all around the theater. And wow. So when it's time for the blast, I give them the cue, and we all blast together, and it's, you know, the audience is completely surrounded. Yeah. And especially the third call, which is called Teruah, which is the call to battle.
Wow.
And it goes, yep, up, 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 up. And everybody in the whole, surrounding the entire audience, they're all going, yep, up, 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 up. It's just very, it's hair raising.
Wow. Wow.
So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
But my wife and I are the musical directors for this performance. And we have a 20-piece choir and a 6-piece professional instrumental ensemble. And she and I write all the arrangements, and it just came off beautifully last night.
That is a ram's horn.
That's a ram's horn, all right.
And it causes confusion in the enemy's camp. Wow. Wow.
I can tell right away he's playing what's called a Yemenite shofar, which is the really long, curly one.
Yes, it is. Yeah. You play a baby shofar.
I play a shorter one, and the reason is I like to play those calls, as they're called, with some pitch bending, with some bending around it. It's much harder to do on the Yemenite shofar. I have one, and it's very impressive looking, but it doesn't make the sound that I like. So I use a shorter one so I can bend around a little bit.
Wow.
And so... I have a fancy one that's kind of decorated with silver.
Is it still a ram's horn, or is it?
It is. Oh yeah. Wow. Oh yeah. Wow. Well, actually, the Yemenite is a related animal. I think it's called the kudu.
Kudu. Yeah. Or kudzu. Kudu. No, kudzu. Kudzu is a plant.
That's a plant. Yeah.
Kudu. Yeah. KUDU. I've seen the kudu. Yeah.
The kudu. Yeah. So they have this long curly horn, and shofars are made out of that, in Yemen anyway. So, as I say, very impressive looking, but it doesn't make the sound I like. So I got the shorter one.
Shofar.
Indeed.
Yes.
So I've been so involved with that over several weeks now, getting the chorus ready and writing the arrangements and everything, practicing my shofar, that I haven't seen the new Star Trek yet. But this weekend,
I want to watch it because then I'll have to buy CBS All Access.
I
don't want to do that.
Well,
that
you know,
pisses me off.
You were mentioning VPNs before.
You could cheat.
If you have a VPN, you can tell it where you want to look like you're from.
But that won't help, will it? Because you still have to have a subscription.
No, because it's on Netflix in Europe.
Oh, so you lie. You say you're in Europe, you're watching
it
on Netflix.
You're in Europe and you watch it on Netflix.
But doesn't Netflix know? But you'd have to be a European.
Well, you know, they do. And a friend of mine said that he got around that because he called Netflix. He tried to say he was from England or Germany someplace.
Yeah. No, they know
and
where you're from.
They know what they're doing. But
in fact, they used to ban VPNs on Netflix.
It was actually he called his VPN service. I forget which one it was. And they said, oh, well, if you go to this address, Netflix doesn't know about that one yet. So at
some
point,
I don't play these games. I just don't support the show.
All right. I accept that. And I perfectly respect your position. So you got to pay for CBS All Access. They do have a 30-day free trial.
Yeah.
So you could binge watch the whole season.
I guess
season.
I don't really want to watch it that badly. I guess that's really the problem.
I'll let you know after I see the first
one. That's the thing. I'm afraid of watching the first one because then I might want to see it, right?
Yeah, well. Yeah. So like I said, I record – the first one was broadcast on CBS and on the broadcast station.
Right.
And I DVR'd it because I do want to see it. I'm a Trek fan, a serious Trek fan. Not to the point of wearing costumes to Trek conferences, but but I enjoy the show. I always have ever since the original, which I watched when it was the original. And I want to see this new one. I don't know yet whether I'll like it. As you say, maybe I will. In which case, okay, go buy it.
How much is CBS All Access?
I don't know. I'll have to go look that up.
It just bothers me that you know everybody's going to end up having their own stream.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to pay for each of them.
I'm not doing it. Not going to do it.
So user 3787, wow, that thing sounds a bit like an air raid siren.
It does.
And it does.
It's the same technology, the same sophisticated technology.
That's right. It's really supposed to call your attention.
Yeah.
And
was it originally a battle thing?
There were three different main calls. One is called – the first one is the call to attention, and it was really the call to attend service.
Attending.
So in the old days, you had the
village. Ringing a church bell, yeah.
It's like ringing a church bell, exactly. The second one, Shevarim, is the mournful call, which we mourn for the dead. And part of this time of year, we mourn for those who died in the past year. It's called the Yitzker. And the third one, Teruah, is the call to battle. And in the original days, of course, it was, hey, everybody go fight our enemies. Nowadays, of course, I interpret it as being fighting our own inner demons, because this is a contemplative time of year. And so we are tasked with looking inward, saying, atoning for our sins, at least acknowledging them, not flagellating ourselves. And how can we be better?
That's what I like about Jews. It's like, all right, I sinned. Big deal. So I sinned.
Well, no.
Nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. And how can I be better next year?
There you go. I like that.
And so it's the call. I see it as the call to battle the inner demons. Also see it as the call to battle the outer demons, those parts of the world that we see and think are unfair or bad in some way. And there's plenty of that around.
Scott, we've used up all your time about the shofar and
which is fine with
Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Thank you.
Yom Kippur. Thank you. See you next week.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. We talk about the new Apple Watch. It uses LTE, but it doesn't. But it costs you $10 or more a month, depending on your carrier, to be able to make phone calls on your watch. Do you think you want to do that? We can talk about that. Augmented reality. That's a big topic these days. Actually, I'm a little disappointed. I was convinced by my friends and people like Robert Scoble, who's an expert on virtual reality and augmented reality, that Apple was going to just do this big breakthrough augmented reality device this year, and that's what the new iPhone was going to be. And I don't know. What do you – it doesn't feel like a breakthrough exactly or anything. IKEA has an app where you can put your furniture anywhere. You can put it in the house. You can put it on the street. Usually I wait till it's an old sofa before I put it on the street. But with IKEA, you can, you know, with the iPhone, you can put it on the street right away before you even buy it. I, you know, that's nice. It's not going to change the world. And I'm just disappointed because I thought this was going to be the big breakthrough for augmented reality. I don't see anything like that on the horizon. Microsoft's HoloLens is still the closest thing to kind of that vision. And it's a long way off. That's a prototype device. You know, ultimately, here, let me describe the promise of augmented reality. That you would buy your next pair of specs, your spectacles, or if you don't wear spectacles, you just wear something that looks like spectacles, maybe a little more stylish. But it could just look like plain old eyeglasses. But it would project onto your normal view of the world additional information or graphics. So you'd be walking down the street and you'd see somebody coming. You go, who is that? And it would project in maybe a little thought bubble over their head. That's Robert. He's got two kids. One of them's in college. The other one's in jail. And you would know that. And you would know not to ask about the kid in jail or whatever. And it would, you know, it would add to, I think that'd be valuable. Or you're driving and you'd have a heads-up display, you know, without obscuring your view of the road. That's the point. You're still engaged in the real world, but you're getting additional information. It's a heads-up display. And that's the closest we've got right now is Microsoft's HoloLens. But it's a long way off because in order to do that, you have to have a very powerful computer with battery life. It's got to last all day, right? It's got to be built into those eyeglasses without making it look like, you know, some giant honking big thing on your head. It's got to have cameras and infrared sensors. A lot of the stuff that actually Apple does put in this new iPhone X, that array, the notch is really an array of useful sensors that would be perfect for augmented reality if only it were facing the other way. It's facing you. It's pointed the wrong way on the iPhone X. So the only benefit of that very sophisticated, highly expensive technology in that notch on the iPhone X is you could do animated emojis. And you could say, I want to look like a monkey, and it'll have perfect lip sync. Because it sees your face and it can match your face to the monkey in real time. Wow. Anyway, Microsoft's HoloLens promises to do all of this, but yet Microsoft says, well, we're at least 2 years off because the technology's not there. They got to make it smaller. They got to make it more better battery life. They've got a long way to go before this is going to be that vision that I described at the beginning, which is just they look like your eyeglasses. Maybe they're a little thicker on the temples. They've got, I didn't even mention audio. They're going to have speakers built in. In fact, that's one interesting way to do augmented reality. And maybe even use one of these voice assistants is to be able to, that way it's just you. You're the only one hearing it. It's not blocking your vision in any way. Then it could say, it could whisper in your ear. Yeah, that's Robert. What? Don't ask about the kid in jail. Not good. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. You want to talk about tech, what's coming or what's here right now? I really kind of like to focus on what we have today. Marco, all the way from Portugal. Hi, Marco.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I am very well. I'm going to Portugal for the first time next year. I'm looking forward to it.
That's great. Yeah. When you come, visit the Madeira Islands.
Ah. Now, do they make Madeira in the Madeira Islands?
Yes.
That's what
yes, they do.
I love Madeira.
It's time of the year when they collect the grapes and the whole process.
Wonderful. All right. Is that where you live, the Madeira Islands?
Yes.
How nice. So what can I do for you?
So my question is the following. I have an HTC One M8 for quite some time.
Very nice phone. In fact, HTC really knocked it out of the park with that one.
Well, the experience was not that great because... Oh. In 2014, something really strange happened to my phone. One morning I woke up and the weather widget on the locked screen started showing as if I was in a man Jordan.
Okay. I can tell you what's going on there. And that's not really necessarily the phone's fault. It could be that the GPS radio stopped working. Were you still getting the navigational stuff like when you used a map program?
No, but I had the GPS turned off.
Okay.
When I unlocked the phone, it changed back to my location. And this happened several times.
I can tell you why it's happening. Do you want to know why it's happening?
Yes.
Because without GPS, the phone has to use other means to figure out where the heck you are. And one of the ways all phones do this, all devices do this, is they look at the Wi-Fi signals around you, or maybe with a smartphone, they look at the cell tower around you, and they figure out where that is. Now, that can be problematic because they basically are using a database that says, well, this Wi-Fi's here, this Wi-Fi's here, this Wi-Fi's here, so he must be roughly here. Or they'll say, well, this carrier's here. So, and what I suspect is happening is that your cell carrier or your internet service provider had a location in Jordan. And so it was making, it was confusing.
I was in Mesir Island. I use a Portuguese ISP. I never went to Jordan.
No, it wouldn't be you. It would be wherever, you know, the phone being confused about location because it doesn't have that GPS signal. GPS, it's not going to make that mistake. But it's the secondary location technologies that are inevitably inadequate. So that's what happens. This happens to everybody. When I travel, I often have this happen. If I look at a map of my travels, it looks like I'm on a rubber band because I'll keep snapping back to where the internet service provider is, and then I'll be somewhere else, and it goes back and forth. So my suspicion is that for some reason it thinks your access point or your cell provider or that cell site is in Jordan.
But the strangest thing was that when I unlocked the phone, it came back to where I am. And yeah. One of the times it didn't. I went to Google Maps and asked it to show my location, and it said I was at the Jordanian Food and Drug Administration in some street. Once I did this, it never occurred, never again. No updates, no anything. It just stopped, as if someone was caught and ran away.
So it's also possible that the phone is broken in some way. I mean, that phone's pretty old. You still use it?
It's almost end of life for me.
Yeah. You're ready for a new phone. It's sad because HTC is getting out of the phone business. They sold their assets to Google. And I guess it's going to be Google making HTC phones. In fact, HTC makes at least one of the new Google phones that's coming out later this week. I really loved HTC, and I loved the HTC 10, the M8. I was less excited about the M9 and M10, but that was a nice phone. It had the boom speakers, the front-facing dual speakers.
For me, it was a lemon. The batteries.
Yeah, you got a lemon.
Yes.
Yeah,
I resetted the phone at the time, and none of these problems ever occurred again. I don't know if that was enough.
He said, I've had it. Hey, well, I'm thrilled that you listen. Marco in Portugal, I'm thrilled that you're in the Madeira Islands. I'm going to make a point of coming to visit you because I love Madeira and I'd love to try some. Thank you so much for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, I guess this is interesting. This kind of just set itself up using that new Quick Start. Now, it's still downloading a bunch of apps. That's the only negative. But that's kind of cool. I didn't have to connect it to a computer or anything. This is you'd be forgiven for not knowing which iPhone this is. This is the 8 Plus. You know, I don't buy that HTC is going to, here's the quote Scooter X is giving us, HTC is going to continue onward with its own smartphone business, even after sending a good portion of its talent and operations over to Google. Yeah, right. That's inexplicable. I guess Nokia continued its phone operations too, didn't they? No, there won't. HTC, unfortunately, they still do the Vibe, I'm sure, but I think they just smartphone businesses for HTC. It's hard. I think everybody except for Apple, Google, and Samsung is going to have a hard time now. Those three are eating up so much of the market. No, I can't wait to play Cuphead. I'm so excited, but I haven't played it yet, Mike B. He wants to know if I've played Cuphead.
It's so frustrating.
It's hard, I hear.
Yeah, but it's fun. But yeah. It's frustrating.
Oh, I can't wait.
But it's beautiful.
I'm so excited. Yeah, that's going to be the than that my next game, I think, unless it's so hard that I can't play it. I can't wait to play it. I would play it, probably play it tonight if I can keep my eyes open. Well, I'm going to play it on the Xbox.
So I think if you buy it on the Xbox or in the Windows Store...
Yeah, it's one of those games now. It's only $20 too, which is nice. I tried to buy it in France with the pre-order on my Xbox app on my phone, but it wouldn't... Oh, I did buy it. No, I did buy it. So I wonder if it's downloaded. I don't have a Windows... Oh, I could play it here. Where would it show up? In the store? Or do I... Must be in the store, right? Actually, I put S back on here, so I'm really screwed. Will Cuphead work? That would be nice. Wow. Be very, very state of the art. You probably don't need a controller. How many? There's just jump and run, right? Right. I can use the arrow keys, right? Our show today brought to you by those nice folks at Qualcomm. You know, when you're talking about speeds on a phone, you cannot ignore the new LTE frequencies and LTE speeds offered by all the carriers in conjunction with Qualcomm's Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. Really, really remarkable what's going on here. And one of the reasons the carriers are so excited about this new Snapdragon Gigabit LTE chip is it solves a problem for them of cellular network congestion. It was designed by Qualcomm to give you great connectivity. You're going to get the fastest speed possible, but also to place less of a burden on those cell towers. So your average LTE download speeds, and by the way, if you want to know whether your phone supports it or not, all the new Android phones do. Go to snapdragon.com/gigabit. The S8 works with, it has the new Snapdragon Gigabit chip in it, LTE chip. My Note 8 does. So you get multiple lanes. It's got 4x4 MIMO, if you know what that means, on this chip. That's something that people on Wi-Fi go, oh, I want 4x4 MIMO. But this is on a phone, which means your average LTE download speeds on this new Snapdragon Gigabit LTE chip, 7 times faster than your typical home Wi-Fi. You can do things like stream those new 360-degree videos on YouTube VR, 4K resolution, minimum buffering. Access all your files on the cloud as if they were local. Download hours of music or movies in a matter of seconds. It's great with Android Instant Apps because the apps now look like they're local. And all of this without burdening your provider, without slowing other people down. It's kind of a miracle. Make the most of your unlimited data plan. To learn more about faster network connections in crowded places, snapdragon.com/gigabit. You can see if your phone supports it, and maybe your next phone should. Snapdragon.com/gigabit. We thank Qualcomm for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. This is a really common question, is this whole location issue. How does your phone know where you are? Well, if you got GPS, or sometimes they call it fine location, or, you know, detailed location. If you have the GPS turned on, it's going to do a pretty good job if it can see the sky. By the way, GPS does not work indoors if you can't see a window. It's a radio and it needs line of sight to the GPS satellites. GPS has other issues as well. When you go to, the first time you go somewhere new, it has to build up what they call the almanac. And so it's going to take longer to lock. Different chips take a while to lock. The lock comes when it can see 3 of the many GPS satellites, and it can triangulate your location, and it does it very, very accurately within a few meters. That will always be right because it'll always have the exact longitude and latitude. I guess it could misidentify it, but the longitude and latitude will be accurate if your GPS radio is on and working in your phone. But if you turn it off or you don't have a GPS chip, many iPads, tablets, most PCs don't have GPS. They have to use some other form of location. If you're on a cell, if you're using LTE or cellular data, it can triangulate the cell towers. It doesn't do it very accurately because there aren't that many cell towers. So it'll give you a rough location. In fact, often when you launch maps, if you've noticed that, when you launch a map application, it'll show you in a very general area. On Google Maps, it's a big blue circle, and it's big at first. And then as it gets a GPS lock, it goes, whoosh, it narrows it down. It gets, now it knows within usually about 3 meters where you are. GPS is pretty accurate. It's actually more accurate than that, but the U.S. military fuzzes it a little bit. They used to fuzz it more, but they fuzz it a little bit. Just, I don't know, to prevent enemy action of some kind. So if you've seen, you could do it right now. Launch your Nav app, and you'll notice that blue thing is big. If it's big in Google Maps, that means it kind of knows where you are. And when it goes smaller, then it says, I know exactly where you are. I got a GPS lock. And the time between those two is some indicator of, you know, are you in a new place? Or is the almanac up to date? How well it can see the GPS? Move over to a window. I know I use it in an airplane, for instance. And if you're not sitting near the window in an airplane, usually you can't get a GPS lock because you're in a metal thing and it can't see the satellites. The triangulation method, if you don't have GPS, is either satellite or by Wi-Fi. And there's a company for years that did this called Skyhook. Many companies now, Apple and Google, do their own Wi-Fi mapping. Google, it's one of the reasons Google does that Street View thing, you know, where they drive around and you can go to Google Maps and you can see a picture of any house, except in Germany where they've blurred it out. Germans are interesting when it comes to privacy. My friend Jeff Jarvis, who loves Germany and goes there a lot, he says it's weird because they'll all take a sauna together. They'll get naked together. No problem. No privacy issue there at all. But if you have a picture of their house on Google Maps, they get upset. And so they have the right, in Germany, you have the right to contact Google and say, blur out my house. Jeff calls it Blurmany for that reason. Blur out my house. But in the process of driving around to get those pictures, Google's doing another thing. They're noting all the Wi-Fi access points. They don't have to join them, by the way. They just see them, and they see the signal strength, and they match the signal strength and all the names to the GPS location they're also getting. And they make a database that says, well, when you see Larry's Wi-Fi, and it's 4 bars, and you see Joe's Wi-Fi, and it's 2 bars, and you see Sally's Wi-Fi, and it's 1 bar, then you're really pretty close to right here. It's triangulating. Kind of like we do with those satellites, but it's doing with the Wi-Fi signal strength. Doesn't need to get on the access point. It just needs to see the access point and see how strong it is. And so Google's been doing this. Apple's been doing this. And this company called Skyhook, they've been doing it for years. And so there are these databases online. There are other kinds of databases. There are IP databases, IP location databases, your internet protocol. You know, it's your digital phone number on the internet. And everyone has a unique IP address. And so when you go online, when you surf the internet with your IP address, there's a database that says, well, where is that IP address? Oh, that's Comcast, Northern California. That person's in Northern California. That's what my IP address tells wherever I visit. But that IP address database is notoriously faulty. In fact, Kashmir Hill, who is a wonderful reporter, works for Gizmodo, wrote a fabulous article. I think it was back when she was at Fusion. About this poor family that owns a house in the middle of the United States, literally in the geographic middle, I think it's in Kansas, of the United States. They're in the middle of nowhere, but the GPS data, the IP databases, the IP address databases are set up in such a way that if they know you're in America but not exactly where, they'll pinpoint you at that house in Kansas. That's the generic America address, probably much like our last caller, the Amman Jordan, what was it, the Food and Drug Administration in Amman Jordan, that building is probably the default address for the country of Jordan. If we don't know that you're in Connecticut or California, we just know you're somewhere in the U.S. based on your internet address, we'll put you in Kansas. And this poor family, people don't understand that, and so they use Find My iPhone, for instance, and they come to they say, you have my iPhone. You've got my iPhone. No, I don't have your iPhone. People have left toilets in their driveway. People, because they think this poor family in Kansas is doing all the evils of the universe. But they're not. It's just because they're in the geographic. They're there where these databases identify them. If they can't figure out where you are in the U.S., you're in Kansas. It's so. if you're using GPS, the bottom line, the moral of the story is if you're using GPS, that's going to be pretty accurate. Your longitude and latitude, if it's got a lock, it's going to be very accurate. It's not, they're not going to be errors there. It's when it's using these secondary locations tools that it may get a different result. It may get a wildly inaccurate. You may put you in the middle of Amman, Jordan. And one of the reasons I'm aware of this is when you're on a cruise ship, if you've ever taken a cruise and you join the Wi-Fi on the cruise ship, an interesting thing happens. The IP address that you're now coming from is owned by the cruise company. And it will think you're in Miami, Florida, no matter where you are in the world, because that's where the cruise company, for example, is headquartered. So if a couple of years ago, I took a cruise, and I then went back and looked at my Google Maps location, and it was the silliest thing, because I would be, oh, you're in Italy. Nope, you're in Miami. 3 seconds later, nope, you're in Miami again. As the phone would get a GPS signal or would get a better location information, it would update the map and it would put me where I was really. And then a few minutes later, it would get confused again. It would just use the IP address and say, yeah, you're back in Miami. It looked like I was traveling at light speed. So that's what happens. And that's why you can't always trust your phone when it says you're here. And it's why your weather forecast, for instance, might be wildly, crazily wrong. 8888, Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll put that link to that article by Cashmere Hill in the show notes, techguylabs.com. How a quiet... Oh, it was for the... No, it wasn't the Wall Street Journal, but this is referring to her article, probably. It's Johnny Jett! Hey, Johnny! How you doing?
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. You're in Italy, aren't you?
No, but close.
What?
Fairly close.
What?
Same letter that it starts with.
Italy, England. I don't know. Wait a minute.
My hat should give it away.
You're in France?
No.
Ireland. You're in Ireland. I remember it now because I saw all your Instagrams of Jack having a good Irish pub breakfast and all of that.
Yeah, sorry, I have to wear my glasses. I cannot see without these glasses right now.
Why not? What's the matter there?
I don't know. My eyes have just gone, and I went to the eye doctor, and he was like,
"You know, too many Guinnesses, my friend."
Yeah, maybe. Although I just had a new beer called O'Hara, which is what. And that's what they're talking about here. They're like, Guinness has really helped the Irish beer scene.
Yeah.
Because of...
yeah, sure.
Yeah, put the, you know...
They call it O'Hara the dog that bit you.
Yeah, so I'm not a beer drinker, but I just tasted some. It didn't taste too bad.
It's hard not to drink beer if you're in...
Ireland.
Ireland. That's for sure.
For sure.
So you're having fun, and Jack's enjoying his first international flight. Does he have Does he have a passport? How do you do that with a baby?
Oh, you have to have a passport, even if he's one day old and flying.
Now, it used to be, when I was a kid and we went to Europe, I was on my mom's passport. So her passport, I picture her and the two kids next to us. But that they don't do that anymore.
No, they have their own passport.
Wow.
He's already been on three... He's already been to Canada three times.
He's in the database now, man.
So that counts. He also has a Nexus card and Global Entry and TSA Pre.
Wait a minute. What?
Yeah. Jack doesn't mess around.
How do you get a Global Entry for a baby? Do they interview the baby?
Yes. And we had to wait an hour to meet with them at the Nexus office in Toronto. This is a few months ago.
Wow.
And
I got
to
do that.
I was like, what are you going to say to him? And so... It was basically just to make sure that he was really our kid.
He's really a baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not a bomb. Well,
you had to hold him up and get out of the photo.
What?
Yeah.
Baby's got a passport.
That baby's could be got the, a Nexus card.
A Nexus card. Entry. Wow. Do they do the? They don't do the iris scan.
No. And so on the back of his card says no iris. So when we land in Canada, we just go. Natalie and I go through our Nexus, and then we just go right to the counter and tell them that, you know, we have a baby. And and I learned a tip, by the way, so if anyone's traveling with a baby, you got to make sure that they put in his paperwork, because the first person had no idea, and they didn't. So then we got sent over to secondary, so we spent like a half hour in there.
Good news. I own Cuphead. I'm going to install it. It works even on Windows 10S.
Very exciting. How was your trip? Besides, I saw all your fabulous pictures.
So it was wonderful. But
did you like Talc?
No.
What?
Not Talc's fault, although I think they've probably seen better times.
I'm shocked.
Couple of things. Well, first of all, I think small group tours are not for Elisa and me. So we're going to go on a bigger group. You know, we want more choices. And we don't want to be forced to hang around. We don't want to be forced to hang around with the same 50 people the whole time.
Too rich and stuffy, or?
They were a little corn-fed. it was very white middle America, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And they were all, not all, mostly fairly elderly.
Were you talking politics every night?
No. Okay, everybody was good. Smart enough to say,
that's good.
I'll tell you more in a second. Here we go. I spy with my little eye a guy named Johnny Jett wearing an Irish pork pie hat, and it looks like you're in an ancient Dublin hotel room. Are you? Where are you?
I am actually in the oldest inhabited castle in Ireland, an hour and a half from Dublin.
How fun.
It's brand new. It's called Kilkea. Kilkea. And actually, the hotel opens up in a month. We're getting a preview. I'm here for a conference. And so there's a bunch of travel bloggers here. But it's...
What fun. And you brought Jack? You brought your one-year-old?
Yeah, Jack and Natalie, they're here. We're sleeping in a castle tonight. You can't beat that.
Johnny told me something before the show began. I did not know. But baby has to have a passport. His own passport.
Sure does.
But you're Johnny Jett, the traveling guy, and your wife, Natalie, is also a traveling guru. She's a Pinterest superstar. The baby, of course, is going to be a traveler. So he has Nexus. He has TSA
Global
Pre.
Global entry.
Does this little baby ticket say TSA Pre on it? You don't have to take off your baby booties?
Yeah, no, he's got it all.
That's so cool.
Because you know, we learned the hard way. We thought just by us having Nexus and Global Entry when we would land in Canada and stuff that we'd just be able to zip through. No. If the baby doesn't have it too,
that's
you guys don't go through.
You guys get in that line, but kid, you're going in that line.
Yes.
I can't even walk.
Yeah.
Wow. Business or pleasure? So Jack is a lucky boy. Is he enjoying Ireland? Does he even know? He doesn't know. He doesn't know where.
No, he doesn't. He's a year old. But
what does he know?
He's been great at adapting, and people love him.
That's
and
nice. Lisa and I were talking. It's better to travel now. In a couple of years, when he's two or three, you're not going to want to get in the plane with him because he'll run up and down the aisle. It'd be crazy, right?
That's what we hear. But we actually flew Aer Lingus over, and because we had Jack with us, we were able to get one of the two bassinets. So if you are traveling with someone under two, you could ask for the bassinet 24 hours before departure.
What's a bassinet?
Right? Bulkhead row, right in the center of the A330.
And they have a built-in baby seat?
Yes, from the wall. So it folds down.
Oh, my God.
And they bring in like a cardboard box. And they put pillows and blankets on it.
It's a bassinet.
Yeah.
Does it say Scott towels on the side? Or
I'll post this
side up. Okay.
But we had so much extra legroom because of that. Otherwise, it was 31 inches. Yeah, now we had like 45 inches.
I flew an A380 back from Paris yesterday. And those are big. Those are beautiful planes. It was British Airways. Beautiful planes.
Sadly, they're getting rid of them, or no one's really buying them. So
they're too big. They got two rows. It's not like the 747, which just had a little small upstairs. It's got two floors of seats.
Yep. So they're not selling.
I tried to wander around, but they close off all the – so you only can be in your section. So I couldn't wander around because I wanted to go see upstairs and downstairs. And the way they load these planes, though, you have to load them at a special gate because they have an upstairs gate and a downstairs gate.
Yeah, they have three. They have three jetways.
It's amazing.
I was on the actual first British Airways flight from LA to London.
It's a lovely plane. A
beautiful plane.
Lovely.
So quiet.
Yeah, very quiet. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, smooth ride.
Yeah.
So Johnny joins us not just to kind of gossip about babies and travel, but to tell us how to travel better using technology. Usually joins us with a website and an app. What do you got for us? Yeah,
so I just came from dinner in Ireland, and I'm sitting across from an Irish guy, and everyone in Ireland loves to talk about the weather. I mean, it's always a topic.
Yeah.
And so I said, by the way, what's your favorite weather app or website? And he said right away, he goes, the letter Y, the letter R.
Oh, the Norwegian.
Dot.
Yeah.
And, yes, it's Norwegian.
Yeah. YR.NO.
Yeah, I never even heard of it.
Yeah.
So obviously you have.
Oh, yeah.
But it's brilliant because you can put in the location and really pinpoint it. I mean, I put in Kilkea, which is a small town, and it will tell you up to the minute or up to the hour, you know, if it's going to rain or not. And he goes, this is what we use. And obviously the long term is always changing here because he said all week they were monitoring the weather. They were afraid it was going to rain today, and it turned out to be a beautiful day. But, you know, it says tomorrow is going to be nice and it might be a little bit of rain around 9 a.m. But this is a great tool for you to use when you're traveling.
Now, there is an English language version probably.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the English version right now. I'm not. So it went right to the Norwegian.
It did initially, but then as soon as I put a place in there, it figured out. This is what we were just talking about. It has to figure out where you are. Now it knows where I am. This is beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. And so on the left-hand side, you can scroll. You can put in hour by hour, or you can do long-term, or you can do the statistics or maps. And I've just been playing around with it just since I came up for dinner.
This is so cool.
15 minutes ago, but I really like it.
Yeah. And this is actually good for travelers before. This was always the question for us. What's it going to be like next week or in 2 weeks when we get there? And this and it's nice to get the long range forecast. And they do have at least a 10-day forecast on here.
Right. And actually last week while you were away, I actually mentioned a website and an app called Weatherbase. Actually, it was a website. And it's also brilliant for long-term planning because it will tell you what the average amount of rain or sunshine or the temperatures and things like that.
Really neat. How well does it work for the U.S.? I've always wondered that. I mean, of course, we're traveling in Europe, but it's YR.no. It's funny because the reason I know about it is some of my phones or maybe one of my operating systems, that's the preferred weather provider. Instead of Weather Underground or the U.S. Weather Channel. And I like it. It's very good.
Take a look and see what it says for Petaluma, and you can tell how accurate it is.
Yeah.
And my app today, since, you know, the big news last week was that Uber was dealt a huge blow in London.
Yes. And in fact, Uber's new CEO is in London right now trying to get that turned around.
Yeah, and he used to be at Expedia. He's a great guy.
He should be good. Yeah,
he should be. But in case it doesn't, I have an app for you when you're in London.
Okay.
And it was actually, since I'm right near London, this is what I was recommended by friends. It's called Gett, G-E-T-T. It's available worldwide, but it's a free app on iOS and Android. But what I like about it for London is that you can order a black cab.
Oh, I love black cabs in London. Yeah,
You know, usually ordering them is kind of a pain. You have to have someone at the restaurant do it or your hotel, and it takes a while. These guys do it within 3 minutes, and it's all – there's 40,000 drivers alone that use it.
Now they're pairing in the U.S. with Juno.
Juno, yeah. I got that too when I downloaded it.
I don't know who Juno is either, but I guess if you're in the U.S., you could use the Juno app for Get. And in London, use the Get app.
Yeah, well, when you're in but I had to change my location to UK just now when I downloaded it. And then I showed it because otherwise it was showing up as Juno.
So this is not a ride sharing thing like
it's
Uber.
Not.
It you're getting a London cab.
You are, but you can actually do a carpool with a London cab.
Oh, how funny.
And they also can do a larger one.
So this is a good alternative.
XL.
You know, we used Uber in Paris. It was great. In fact, we were talking about it at a restaurant and the people next to us said, "Did you just say you can use Uber here?" And we said, "Yes." They said, "Does it work?" I said, "Oh yeah, it works great."
Oh yeah,
and it was inexpensive. And sometimes the Parisian cabbies, they can be. I think the word is truculent. I remember last time I was there, it was snowing, and they just roll up their windows, light as Galois, and start reading the paper. They're not going to drive you anywhere. So
you just can't hail one either.
No.
Like in the middle of the street,
Uber
you have
is
to
great.
Go to it.
I know Uber's had problems and so forth, but it's a boon for travelers. I'll tell you another one that I use for traveling, and I know you've mentioned it before, City Mapper.
Yep.
And I was telling everybody on the trip because we said, "Oh yeah, we took the metro." They said, "How do you know how to take the metro?" You get City Mapper, which will tell you how to use mass transit in most big cities in the world. It's wonderful.
Yep.
It's a great app.
And the best thing about Uber in France and other places is that you don't have to worry about the language barrier. It tells you.
That's right. You don't have to talk to the guy.
Where to go. Yeah. It doesn't matter if he doesn't understand you or not.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Johnny. Sorry, I used up all your time. I apologize.
That's okay. Don't be silly.
It's good. It's fun. It was a good segment. I like it. Yeah, I what were we talking about? Oh, talc. I think Touch's good for the right people. I'm not one of those people who says, I'm not going to do tours. I'm going to do it all on my own, and I'm just going to show up in the country, and I'll figure out where to go and what to do. I used to be that way when I was younger. But especially in countries where there's a language barrier, I like to have some help.
Right.
And so, but Tauk was a little too much help. So anywhere I want to be, somewhere in the middle, kind of.
So when you arrive at the airport, they just...
I love that, though. No, that's part I love, and there was nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But they had four guides on this boat for 90 people. I mean, it was crazy. And there was, there were a few little things. It wasn't the greatest boat. Like, we've been on it was a river boat. They do not have the, it's not a five-star river boat, no. It's a four-star. You know,
Scenic Cruises has really
Scenic,
nice
everybody boats. Was saying Scenic. They're Australian. Yeah. Everybody said Scenic.
Yeah. They are.
We have to do, because we've already paid for another Tauk next spring. Maybe it will be better. We're going to be in Japan. And both Lisa and I agree. If we're going to Japan, we're not going on our own to Japan. I'd like to, but I'm too old for that.
Have you been to Japan before?
No. Well, yes, I have, but I've been to Nagasaki.
Okay. Well, the Japanese are some of the friendliest people.
Oh, I know. It's
so clean.
I can't
wait.
Yeah.
You know, the language barrier is a problem. Look, it's just
showed up. Hi, Jack.
Little man.
Look at the little Jack. Oh, he's got so much. He's really growing up fast.
He wants to look like his daddy.
He's got a little hat. He's got a little hat.
He's got a little patty hat.
Oh, he doesn't want to wear it.
You don't want to wear it?
Babies are so cute in hat, but they're like cats. They're really not crazy about hats. You'd think Cat in the Hat would be, but no.
He actually wore it all day yesterday around town. It was funny.
Nice. So anyway, nothing wrong with Tauk. I think it's just not for us more than anything else. So
I got you.
There he is. Anyway, have a great time in Ireland. I'm so glad. So glad.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a wonderful time.
Thank you. I'll speak to you next week. I will not be in Ireland, but I'll be somewhere else.
Somewhere magical. Thank you, Johnny.
Magic. Here. Bye-bye.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Pardon me while I talk tech. Back to the phones. We go on line one, Tom in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Leo. Yeah, I more or less just have a statement.
Okay.
And what it is I'm hearing all of this conversation about the new phones and how much they cost. And I want to put things a little bit more perspective, because when I started with computers, it was back in 1970, and I hired on with Control Data Corporation, and they had a computer system with 66,000, and it was huge.
It filled a room, probably, right? Hello.
The cell phones nowadays.
Yeah.
That computer cost $1 million. And a single disk drive, which it had a number of them. In fact, the system I worked on had a floor of just disk drives. Each disk drive capacity was 700 megabytes. And it was the size of...
700 megabytes. So, unfortunately, as wonderful as modern phones are, yours is fading in and out. And so I'm only hearing a little bit of what you're saying. But I understand it, and I agree with you. And I think anybody who, like you, has had some time in this business realizes how far we've come. You've got a mini supercomputer in your pocket with a modern phone. And so $1,000 – and there's other ways to look at this, too – if you think about how much time you spend on a phone, 3 hours, 2 or 3 hours a day for most people, it's your most used computer, right, in your house. And then you divide the amount of time you spend on that phone into the, how many hours a day. Let's say 2 hours a day, 365 days. Let's say 700 hours a year, 1,400 hours in the 2 year lifetime of that phone. It's not a huge amount of money. It's less than $1 an hour. And it is the most useful device. I have to say, just traveling, for instance, on my vacation, I was just struck by how useful. And I don't even, how do we survive in a foreign city without a smartphone? I used the maps. I used the restaurant recommendations. I never had to worry about getting lost because I knew I could always, I would drop a pin. When we walked out the door of anywhere, or we had said we meet back here in an hour, I would drop a pin. And then I could just navigate back to the pin. It's phenomenal. In fact, I used the Apple iPhone and the Apple Watch, and I used Apple Maps as a result because the watch would then tell me which way to go. As I approached a turn, it'd go on the watch, and I'd have to turn right or turn left. I didn't even have to pull out the phone to figure out which way to go. So I agree with you. These are horrendously useful devices. It's just that $1,000, if you look at it from the other perspective, is a lot of money to lay out on a device that is, I think size has something to do with it. If it was as big as that control data computer, if it filled a room, maybe we'd think, well, we're getting our $1,000 worth. But it's such a little thing, easy to lose, easier to break. I think it just it gnaws on people that they have to. That's cost $1,000. And Apple, by the way, Apple's slowly ratcheting those prices up, not just of the phone, but of the repair costs and of the Apple Care, the warranty. All of that got a little more expensive this year, and has been getting a little more expensive year by year. And it just ratchets up, and bit by bit, and people are starting to just, it grates on us. So I understand both sides of it. It is a remarkable, I mean, this thing is a miracle device if you think about it. Your smartphone is amazing what it can do. It's a better camera. These new iPhone 8s, probably a better camera than any point and shoot out there. Has some limitations, you know, but it also does computational photography better than any camera out there, including a $10,000 DSLR. So those are really remarkable, and it is easy to take for granted these advances we've made. And so somebody like you or me, I go back not quite that far, but I go back a ways long enough to, you know, it used to be we'd say the computer you want is always $2,500. And what we've seen, in fact, is an incredible drop in price on personal computers, laptops and desktops. Now the computer you want is typically between $500 and $1,000. It's less than half as much. But that's another reason why the phones seem so expensive. And their prices, by the way, on computers have been going down, but they've been going up on phones, haven't they? By a lot. So I understand both sides. And I think it's really hard on people who just say, I can't lay out $1,000. One of the things that changed is in the early days, until a few years ago, you didn't see the price of the phone. They've always been pretty expensive. First iPhone was, what, $600? They've always been, in fact, I remember Steve Ballmer at Microsoft laughing, saying, nobody's going to buy a $600 phone. That's crazy. Boy, was he wrong. But you didn't see that price. You saw the, you know, $200 you had to give the phone company and then the monthly fee over 12 or 24 months. In Canada, I think it's 3 years, 36 months. And so it was subsidized. You didn't see the full price. And so that's why we're also, there's a little more sticker shock these days, because now, for the most part, we're buying them outright. We're well aware of what it costs. You know, I have the Samsung Galaxy Note 8. That's $830 to $860, depending on the carrier you get it from. And the new iPhone, the X, when it comes out in November, it's very close to $1,000. And if you want more memory, it's going to be even more than that. I guess here's what I would say. Yes, it's amazing. This technology is amazing. It's also really a good deal when you think about how valuable it is, how sophisticated the technology is in here. Camera, GPS, internet connectivity, super fast processors. The processor in the newest iPhones is as fast as your laptop computer. It's faster in some respects than a MacBook Pro. So, yeah, $1,000 is, I guess, justified. This technology, you know, even if Apple's making, 100% profit, which it probably is, it's still, that's not an unreasonable amount of money for what you're getting. On the other hand, this is something almost everybody needs, and very few people can easily afford $1,000 out of their pocket every couple of years. That's a big expense. It becomes one of the most expensive things you buy. So while it's, I guess, a good value, it's still out of reach for some people. The good news is The very good news is this technology trickles down. And so the technology that was in last year's iPhone or the year before's iPhone is now widely available for half as much from other companies. You can't get an iPhone. I mean, Apple does offer the iPhone SE, which is basically the iPhone 5S, a couple of generations old, for, what is it, $330, $350? So they're getting down. And frankly, the Motorola G5 is $200. There are some very good, if you can live with Android, and I think Android's great, but it's the iPhone that's really out of price, out of reach for most people. For Android devices, there's some very good ones in the $100 to $200 range. And it's maybe a year old technology. The camera's not quite as good as the latest and greatest. So I think that's pretty good. I understand what you're saying. I really do. And I'm just sorry your phone didn't work well. It kind of cut out. Let's see if we can take another one here before the end of the hour. I believe that's line 5. Barbara, Thousand Oaks. Hi, Barbara. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
I have a 5S iPhone.
Yes.
And you were just talking about it, but it keeps asking me to download iOS 11.
Yeah.
And I understand that maybe I shouldn't do it because it starts with iPhone 6. Is that correct?
No. If Apple's saying download it, then they believe it will work fine on your 5S. And it should, because that's the oldest technology Apple's still supporting, in effect, with their iPhone SE. So that's an interesting question. If that's about the oldest phone I'd do it on. The reason you'd want iOS 11 is some significant security improvements. There's some benefits, and some applications will require it. So, I don't know if there's any way to say, Apple, no, I don't want it. The reviews are that iOS 11 on a 5S is slower. You know, it definitely slow it down a little bit, but it's still faster than, for instance, an iPhone 5 on iOS 10. In other words, it's usable. And I think because of the security improvements, because of the features, you probably should do it. In fact, I don't know of any way to tell Apple you don't want to. Eventually, you're just going to give up and do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I will put an article for you. This is from Ars Technica. Andrew Cunningham, who's really great, has written an article about exactly your question, which is, what is it like to run iOS 11 on a 5S? And I'll put that in the show notes so you can read the article. I mean, it's quite a detailed article. He even does benchmark performances. He says slower, but not slow. In other words, usable. He says iOS 11 on iPhone 5S doesn't feel bad. It's fine. Let me see. Should you update? He says, I could understand wanting to hang around on iOS 10 if you have an iPhone 5S. Apple's oldest supported iPhone indisputably loses some of its pep in the move to iOS 11. And while it gets a lot of the same things as the other new devices, it still misses out on augmented reality, the improved voice in Siri, and some other things. He says, but as I do every year, for most people, I would come down in favor of updating. In other words, it's not bad. It's not a bad experience, and the benefits outweigh the, he says, maybe 10% difference. So unless you want to get a new phone, you know, and that's going to make a big difference in performance. I agree with Andrew. I think you have the oldest phone that you can still update. That's why Apple's offering it to you. I'd say do it. You're not going to notice a huge slowdown. And again, I'll put this article so you can read it in the show notes. So that's a challenging question for everybody, isn't it? When is it time to stop upgrading? And pressing any button. I love the vintage. Hear the crackling? Once upon a time, in a magical place called Inkwell Isle, there were two brothers named Cuphead and Mugman. They lived without a care under the watchful eye of the wise Elder Kettle. One day, the two boys wandered far from home, and despite the Elder Kettle's many warnings, ended up on the wrong side of the tracks and entered the Devil's Casino. Inside, Cuphead and Mugman soon found themselves on a winning streak at the craps table. "Hot dog!" exclaimed King Dice, the casino's sleazy manager. "These fellas can't lose!" "Nice run, boys," laughed a newcomer. The brothers gasped. It was the casino's owner, the Devil himself. "Now, how about we raise the stakes?" he suggested with a toothy grin. "Win one more roll and all the loot in my casino is yours," the Devil boomed. "But if you lose, I'll have your souls. Deal?" Cuphead, blinded by easy riches, nodded and grabbed the dice for a throw. "Good gosh, Cuphead, no!" cried Mugman, for he understood the danger, but it was too late.
Wow. We'll just have to continue this saga later.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, hour number three of the Tech Guy program. Back from vacation, ready to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. Did anything happen while I was gone? Anything at all? Man, more security breaches. Yeah, that was to be expected. More viruses, more security issues. At this point, I would understand if you decided, I'm not going to touch the internet ever again. I'm not going to use these. This is crazy. These computers are crazy. But I also have to point out that while we talk a lot about, and I certainly spend a lot of time talking about it on this show and on other shows I do, we talk a lot about security flaws. Most people run into some just simple run-of-the-mill stuff. Most people do not run into the very sophisticated issues that you read about every day. For instance, just yesterday, a security company called Duo said, "Oh my goodness, tear your hair out. Turns out many Macintoshes, for some reason, haven't updated their firmware, their EFI firmware." This is not something running off your hard drive, but actually the hardware of the computer, and are vulnerable. Oh my goodness. And it may be many Windows PCs and Linux PCs are as vulnerable as well because EFI is hard to update. Oh no, tear your hair out. Or, you know, go back. Oh, Samsung TVs, bad guys can hack into them and turn on the camera without your knowledge and watch what you're doing while you're sitting and watching Oprah or whatever. And people, I think you get scared and it's nerve-wracking, but for the most part, this stuff doesn't happen. It is a theoretical possibility. It's not impossible. But for the most part, people, the thing you have to worry about is more like the stuff you get, the email you get that says, you know, install this program, or the pop-up that you said, this is, you know, Windows is in trouble. You need to call us now and give us $300 and we'll fix your system. That's the stuff. And the stuff that's easily avoided is the stuff most people are becoming victim to. So don't get too terrified. It's good to be cynical. It's good to be prudent. If you listen to this show by now, you are. But I don't want people to go, "Oh, I'm never going to use the internet again." Because there's so much value to this that you shouldn't let it stop you. Here's what you need to do, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Keep your system up to date. That's the most important thing. The most important thing you can do. Keep your operating system and the programs you use, especially the programs you use to go on the internet, up to date. Every operating system now gets automatic updates. Macintosh, Windows, even Linux, they get automatic updates. When you are offered an update, or your iPhone, like our last caller, take it. Do it, because that does fix problems. And it will keep bad guys out of your system. It's the simplest, easiest thing you can do. That's number one. This actually should be number one, two, three, four, and five. Then number six is don't take candy from strangers. But your mother taught you that years ago, I'm sure. If somebody sends you an email saying, "I've got $50 million in the bank and I'd like to give it to you," they don't. And they won't, and you will get robbed ultimately. If you get a pop-up that says, "This is Windows, and you have bug, please call," don't. It's not Windows. It's bad guy. If you get a link from somebody on Facebook, even especially from a friend, this is the real problem, is that if your friends get hacked in their email or their computer or their Facebook, they'll look like they're sending you messages. "I have a video of what you did last night. I can't believe it. You've got to see this." It's no. Don't click on that link. Okay. Just be really cautious. If you get emails, don't click on those. Just, it's easy. Oh, let me see what's going on. Oh, especially because they scare you. Hi, this is your bank. Foreign transactions happened last night. We're worried. Please log in and tell us it's okay. And don't click that link. If you feel like, well, maybe it's true, open your browser manually and manually type in the name of your bank. Don't click that link. So that's really it. And 99.9% of all the exploits, all the hacks that people are going to, you and I will become exposed to are those simple everyday things that we can easily prevent. Don't worry about the bad guy who's going to hack your refrigerator and make all your food spoil. That's not going to happen. It's too hard to do. These are theoretical possibilities, highly unlikely. Just update your system and be cynical. Don't take candy from strangers. Don't click that link. Don't open that attachment. That's how they get you. It's not hard. 8888, Ask Leo. Ron from North Hollywood. Hi, Ron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
Hello, Ron. I'm well. How are you?
Well, I can tell that you're well because you got a neat sports coat today. Wow.
I thought I'd upgrade my act a little bit, but it is the radio, so only you know.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess we can carry on.
Was it something in my voice that gave it away?
Absolutely.
We have a live video stream, behind-the-scenes video stream, and somebody's figured out how to watch that, apparently.
Yes, and I was watching you do the cupcake thing there.
This new game that just came out. It was actually the main reason I came back from vacation is so I could play Cuphead. on my Xbox or my Windows machine.
Okay, yeah. Wait, how old are you?
I'm a kid at heart. It's a video game, but the problem is they announced it almost 3 years ago, and we've all been waiting. It's a kind of vintage. Looks like, remember Crazy Cat or Felix the Cat? These old vintage cartoons. It has that feel to it. And I kind of like that. Anyway, we'll see.
That's cool.
Cuphead is the name of it.
That's cool.
What can I do for you?
Well, I got a note four. And the situation is, now this is not iTunes I'm talking about, but in other words, I'm in a recording studio, so I do things, and then I'll put together an MP3, send it to myself, and then download it on my phone.
Are you a voiceover guy? Because you have that kind of voice.
Well, I was in radio for about 17 years.
Yeah, too. I can tell.
So anyway, the point...
I like
problem,
it.
The problem is...
You know what happens when radio guys... Have you ever been to a Gavin convention? Their voices get lower and lower. Hi, how are you? Still working at WPRO? No, I'm over at KLS now. They get lower and lower.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
I know.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, boy.
So you have a Note 4. Nice, yes. Phone. A little out of date. We're now up to the Note 8, but that's okay.
But it's paid for. So
yeah.
Really cool.
And the Note 4 had some nice advantages. You could change the battery, for one thing. So well, that keeps it going.
You know what? I did change the battery. Actually, I bought one from Walmart about a month ago.
Yeah. See?
Put new battery in because,
with any of the newer phones. They're sealed in there.
That's stupid.
I agree. It's wasteful.
That's goofy. Yeah. Well, anyway, the problem goes like this. So anyway, I send myself an email.
You send yourself an MP3, yeah.
With an MP3, and then I download the MP3 to my phone so I can listen to it on the way home.
Clever.
What the mixes sound like.
Clever.
But it'll hang on to it for a day, and then it loses it out of the download file.
Yeah, they're trying to say, you know, the phone, they don't want you to fill up your storage with this stuff.
Really?
So what I would suggest is instead of emailing, it's funny, I still do this. Emailing is the easiest way to get data from one point to the other. Just send yourself an email. But really, there are negatives. First of all, you just heard me say, don't open attachments. So the habit of opening or sending email attachments is one we want to break.
Really?
There's also, in many email systems, a limit to how big that file can be. MP3s probably don't get that big, but still, there's a limit. And then you're seeing this other problem, which is they don't save them forever. They're trying to save space on your phone. So you could, is an iPhone, you said, oh, no, it's a Note 4. You can, I think, from the email, depending on the email program, click that link and download it to a folder on your phone. In fact, when you click it to open it and play it, depending on which player launches, if it's the Samsung player, look in the menu. There's probably a way to save it out. I do that with ringtones, for instance. I'll email myself a ringtone, start it playing, and then I'll go to the menu in the playback
thing and say, make this a ringtone. And there may be other choices. However, what I'd like to recommend is that you use one of these external cloud storage services. Dropbox is very good. You can get 5 gigabytes for free. Just you put it on Dropbox. It stays there forever. You can play it directly from Dropbox on your device. You can download it to your computer. It's a more permanent form of storage and, frankly, a safer way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry, I had to take a break there. But Dropbox is one of many. And well, they give you 5 gigs free.
I've got my own FTP as far as...
Yeah, but that's kind of a pain in the ass, too.
Well, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
But this has just started to happen recently, see.
I think it's just... What mail app are you using? Are you using the Samsung mail app?
Yahoo.
Oh, you're doing it on the internet. Using your you use your browser to go to it.
Yeah, sure.
And then the
browser to go to it, and then I download
and
it.
And day two, it's not there anymore.
Yeah, and I went into a Verizon store. I told the guy this, and he said, "Wow, that's weird." And I said, "Well, okay, let's download it today, and then I'll come back tomorrow." I did. He looked at it. It was gone. He was like, "Wow, never saw that."
Well, that's Yahoo then doing it, and that sounds like they want to save storage space. That's ridiculous because they shouldn't delete attachments. Mm-hmm. So the simplest thing would be, I get it now.
It's like deleting the attachment. It goes to the download file. I go to the download file. I play it. It goes away from the download file.
So when you click the link in the email, it says downloading?
Right.
And then at the top of notifications, it'll say,
a little arrow saying
downloaded. And then you click that and it plays.
Oh, yeah. No, I close and I go back and I open up the download file itself. I go directly to the download
and
file.
It plays.
About four screens.
I got another solution for you. So another way to do this would be, it sounds like the Samsung is trying to save space, and when it downloads it, it doesn't download it to a permanent folder. It downloads it to a cache folder.
No. Okay.
So what you want to do, and you can, there are a lot of these file managers. There are many free ones that will let you move it. So just like on a regular computer, it's one of the nice things on Android. You can't really do this very easily on a Mac, but you can move it to a folder where it will be more permanent.
Okay.
Is it in your downloads folder? When you open the Samsung downloads app, do you see the file there?
I see the file there in the downloads.
How strange.
Other things are there as well. See?
But it's deleting that one.
There before. In other words, it only started doing this about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Well, I mean, that's the problem with these phones. They're always getting updates. Are you running short of space? Are you running short of space on your phone?
No, not at all. Not really.
So Samsung does offer a downloads app, which will let you see just that folder. Uh-huh. But there are more sophisticated file management apps. I used Astro for many years. That's free. That's a good one. That you could say, well, move that out of downloads. Make a folder of your music and move it out of downloads and keep it here. Or put it in the music folder, and then your music player will automatically see it.
I think that's the solution. I think that sounds like the winner.
And you'd put it, and that would be permanent there. It's not going to delete it from your music folder because your music's permanent.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of file managers. Astro's the one I generally use. Samsung's come with, at least modern ones do, something called My Files that should let you do this as well. So you might look, you might already have a program. So a file manager, you'll have to navigate around. And one of the reasons this is a little more challenging is because Android has a weird file structure. But navigate around, you'll find it, and then just move it into your music folder. That's probably the best thing to do.
Okay, I'll do that. I'm just concerned because like 3 weeks ago it stopped handling.
That's weird.
It's before.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, oh my God, it melted.
Things, weird things happen. So you're making what kind of music?
Well, this particular stuff I'm doing is my daughter. I'm working. I got her up on YouTube and
that's
all
neat.
That kind of stuff.
Oh, that's neat. What's her channel? Can you tell me, or is it private?
Her name is Tanya McCoy.
Is she a singer?
Yeah, she's a singer.
Oh, I'll look her up.
Yeah, there's 4 or 5 tunes. The last one we did is really sweet. It's called The Lullaby.
I will play it in the next break.
Yeah, The Lullaby is the sweet one.
Thank you.
Okay, man.
Nice to talk to you. Take care. Bye, Ron. I stayed on with Ron. Leo Laporte, the tech. I stayed on with our last caller, Ron, for a few extra minutes and made another suggestion, which is a really great thing. And Apple's just added this capability in iOS 11. But for years on Android, you could get a file manager. fact, many Android phones, Galaxy phones, come with My Files. There's third-party file managers like Astro. And if you've downloaded a file and you want to make it more permanent, you can use a file manager and move it somewhere more permanent. I was suggesting that Ron maybe take the music that he's emailed himself and the attachment that he's downloaded and move it into your music folder. And that way your music app will see it and you can play it anytime you want. My suspicion is that there was an update and they just decided, well, we don't want to, we're just going to put these downloads, these email attachment downloads, we're going to put them in a temporary folder and they're just disappearing over time. I guess it's a weird thing. Apple's just added this. iOS 11 now has a file manager. You can open files. In fact, that's one of the things you'll get if you update to iOS 11. Scroll around in your iPad or your iPhone and you'll see a files. You can open it. It'll show you files that belong to various apps on your iPhone, but it will also allow you to log into third-party cloud storage systems like Apple's iCloud, but also Google's Drive or Microsoft's OneDrive or Dropbox, which I mentioned. There's a lot of these. And if you have a Dropbox app, for instance, you install it on your iPhone, all of a sudden Dropbox will show up in your files application. And that's very handy. Thank you, Apple, for finally adding that feature. That makes it more like a computer and less like an appliance. Apple's always kind of balancing, right? They want their computers and even more their iPhones and iPads to be like appliances that you just use. They just work. However you think it's going to work, it just does. It just kind of, and you don't have to dig around and stuff. The problem with that is sometimes it doesn't. And there's no recourse if it doesn't work like you think it's going to work. Most of the calls I get with people having problems with their iPhones or their iPads is because it didn't just work. It just didn't work. And now what do I do? And Apple doesn't give you a lot of tools. So having this new files tool, that's great. You can ignore it. In fact, I would ignore it unless you suddenly say, oh, but what I want to do is take that recording from my recording application and move it over to my music folder, that kind of thing. Then it'll be nice to have. 8888-ASK-LEO. On we go. Sarah in Arizona. Hi, Sarah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I have a dilemma where I accidentally spilled something on my laptop and fried it.
Uh-oh. 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 That's not good.
I told you screened her the truth. It was a glass of wine.
Hey. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to judge you.
Thank you.
I'm not going to judge you. The only thing that's okay, sometimes you can spill water, but anything like wine or soda pop or coffee with cream, that's going to pretty much destroy it.
It's toast. So I've ordered a new one, and it's coming in a few days, but in the interim, a friend lent me hers, which is essential, because I have two jobs, both of which are online.
Yeah. So you need it. This is a mission critical device for you.
Exactly. Yeah. My question, though, is I also, partly related to the jobs, partly personal, have a variety of G and Y mail addresses.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, I want to access my mail and respond, but it seems like, especially with Gmail, they make me add the account. And my concern is, although this is a friend,
I understand you don't want to leave all your stuff lying around on her computer.
Right. So I don't want her.
So here's the best way to do this. Is her computer a Mac or a PC?
It's a PC.
Doesn't really matter, but because what you're going to do is she's given you her computer and apparently given you a login to her computer, right?
She did.
Yeah. Yes. So now you're using her account. But what would be better is to make one of your own. And then you can do all that stuff in your account. And then when you give it back to her, before you give it back to her, you delete your account.
Oh, I wish I would have thought of that.
Well, you can do it now. Move everything over there. And for future, when somebody lends you a computer or when you lend your computer to somebody, you should always do this. Don't give people your account. Make an account, a guest account for them. Give them a password and account. And then it doesn't impinge on your stuff. And you don't have to add this issue of, well, now I've got stuff on here I don't want anybody to see.
Mm-hmm.
So work on a different account, and you can do that now. You go into the control panel, and the users or the accounts control panel, and you can say make a new account. You have her password. Make a new account. It'll give it administrative privileges, so you can install software if you want. And then log out of her account and log into your account. And now everything you do is going to exist in that account alone. And when you finally give her the computer back, you log out of your account, you delete it in her account. You'll go into her account and delete it. It'll say, do you want to delete all the data associated with this account? And you say, yes. And then now it's back to the way it was before she gave it to you.
Okay. Can I ask you one more quick question?
Sure.
On my new computer, which is arriving in a few days, I looked on your website about what the best antivirus.
The best antivirus is no antivirus.
Oh.
You know, we one thing that happened while I was gone is CCleaner, which is a program a lot of people in the chat room recommend, and I've always avoided recommending. It's a utility. Turned out for the last couple of months, every time you installed it, it was installing malware on your system. I can go back and tell you about a number of well-known major name antiviruses that opened holes on your system and allowed bad guys to get into it. And
well, I know you hate Norton and McAfee.
Yes.
McAfee is what comes with.
Don't install any, and I'll tell you why. Windows 10 comes with a built-in antivirus and malware removal tool. It's part of the system, and it's enough. The problem with installing an antivirus is it's twofold. One, it gives you a false sense of confidence. In the best case, an antivirus is going to detect about half of the things that attack you. Half. So, but people go around going, well, I got an antivirus, I'm safe. And you're not. Two, the second problem is because these programs operate at a low system level, if they've got any flaws, and every software program has flaws, they're opening your system up to bad guys. The real rule, and this is the CCleaner rule I'm going to call this, is install as little software as you can, because every time you put another program on your system, it opens potential security problems. Install nothing you don't absolutely need, and I can tell you right now, you don't absolutely need an antivirus.
Okay, and if McAfee's already on it when I open it up?
Just uninstall it. First thing I do when I get a new PC, they've got all this, they call it trialware. I call it crapware. First thing I do is I go into the add remove programs and features, and I uninstall everything that I don't want. Now, don't go too crazy, because sometimes there's stuff on there that the computer manufacturer put on there for keeping it up. But anything that's trialware, and I include Candy Crush Soda, and I just uninstall all that stuff, because I don't. This is my new rule, which I've never mentioned because I just made it up. Install as little as possible on your system. And if at all possible, only install stuff from big names that you can really trust. That really is a good form of hygiene. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What kind of computer is it? Who'd you get it from? Are you still there? Oh, she's gone. Darn it. Don't hang up after I'm done talking to you, because sometimes I want to talk to you some more. Lenovo's nice, so the ThinkPads are nice because they're basically signature PCs. They don't put anything on there, including McAfee. But if you get a trialware on there, just uninstall it. And boy, this is my new rule, which I'm going to, over the next few weeks, expound upon. But it is always the case that anything you install on your computer opens potential holes. And CCleaner is a really good example. And since CCleaner is not particularly useful, I feel bad for all the people who installed it. Install as little as possible. Everything you install weakens you. In fact, that's one of the reasons Microsoft did Windows 10S and Google does Chromebooks. These operating systems severely limit what you can install. You can only install on a Windows 10S system stuff in the Windows Store. On a Chromebook, you can only install Chrome extensions, and that makes a huge difference. Okay, let me go back. Cuphead.
Cuphead. All right, the devil, snake eyes, right, right. We're all... Oh, man, where'd you go? So apparently they're in hell. Oh, you have to collect souls for the devil. Wow. What a fine pickle you boys have gotten yourselves into, says Grandpa. I don't know if you want to be the pawns of the devil, but if you refuse, I can't bear to imagine you're going to smile. Oh, I have to go somewhere. Tutorial. Tutorial Z? Z? So I guess I better do Z. It's Cuphead time. Hello, sir. I'm playing Cuphead. Duck, hold down to crouch. Okay. Jump, tap for short. Hold for high jump. Dash, quick evade on ground or air. Shift.
Shift.
Oh, I get it. Oh. Okay, down plus Z is descend. Drop down from certain platforms. Down plus Z. Ah. X. C. Hold to stay in place. Eight-way aiming. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Going on to Jerry. He's on the line from Santa Monica. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. It's an honor. I've been listening to you since Screensavers with Kate, and it's good to talk to you.
Going back to 1998. That's almost 20 years ago.
Oh, tell me about it.
But, you know, I haven't aged a day, have I?
No, you're still fine.
It's all that red wine. What can I do for you, Jerry?
So I'm the network admin for a commercial printing company, mainly the art department.
Okay.
We've got a lot of data that we keep online. You know, old jobs, new jobs, totaling about 4.5 terabytes.
Holy
and
cow.
So we back it up currently to a Drobo Pro FS. We've got an 8-drive bay on the network. And I do a combination of super-duper disk images as well as a time machine, you know, so I have common backups to the same device.
Nice.
But we want to start off-site. And I've evaluated several vendors. We looked at Backblaze. We looked at a couple others that offer unlimited storage. But it's going to take about 3 months.
That's the problem. That's the problem. When you're storing massive amounts of data, you have to consider your upload speeds. And, of course, any online provider is not going to use all your upload bandwidth, or you wouldn't have any download bandwidth. So
yeah, we're currently at 50 down, 5 up.
Yeah, so they're going to use maybe 2 or 3 megabits at most. Otherwise, they'd just clobber your internet access. So
exactly.
Do the math, and you can see it takes months. So what you want is a provider, almost everybody will do this, that will let you send them a hard drive.
Now, Backblaze offers a service where they'll send you a drive, but only for restoral purposes. And then you send the drive back to them.
Right. You want somebody that will send you, I mean, and that's the other side of it, of course, is because you need to get back up and running. I'm going to give a plug to our sponsor, Carbonite. They will let you do it in both directions. In fact, they have a solution. Well, you know, at least look at them. But they are, I should disclaimer, of course, they're a sponsor. And then there are other ways to do this. I think some of Amazon's solutions, maybe Glacier will allow you to send them a hard drive. Just remember that restoring is going to be time consuming as well. Some people choose to just do what you're doing is one of the most important parts of backup. I would say number two, and number one is doing it. Number two is do some of it off site, get it away from the print shop, because if the print shop is in a hurricane or burns down or there's a flood or, you know, all sorts of things can happen. Somebody steals all your stuff. You want to, at least part of your backup should, you know, strategy should be away from the place. It doesn't have to be cloud, by the way. Cloud's convenient,
but it could be physically off-site.
Yeah, we've also talked about just getting like a 6 terabyte drive, plugging it into, we have a Mac Mini running Apple File Services. So plug it in there once a week, do a differential copy, and then take it home for the week.
Exactly. Exactly. Or a good solution, and I'm sure you can fix this into your system. Many NASs, the one I use, which I love, Synology, not a sponsor, but they might as well be because I plug them all the time. Synology allows you to have duplicate NASs at work and offsite and keep in sync. So what you might do is for that first backup, bring that second one next to the computer, do a high-speed backup over Thunderbolt, then bring it to home or wherever the offsite is. And from then on, they'll automatically do incremental backup to each other. And that's easy. It's the first initial 3 terabytes that takes forever. Keeping it up to date after that is not troublesome.
Yeah, the Drobo Pro FS offers that as well.
Yeah, Drobo will do it. Yeah.
They don't make that model anymore.
I know. They have a new one. Yeah. Drobo's also a sponsor, I should mention. I'm a fan of Drobo's. But generally for network-attached storage, I have Drobo's at home as very big, fast USB drives. But I generally use Synology for network-attached storage. And
it's because of your recommendation that we purchased the Drobo.
Good. Are you happy with it?
You know, I wish the speed was faster.
Yeah.
Sometimes it tends to get a little cranky. You know, it'll speed up, slow down.
That's why they've replaced the FS, right? They have newer, high speed. By the way, that speed is not constrained by the pipeline. It's the processor.
Yeah, we're on a gigabit network, right. You know, and so it should be fine. But
it's the processor. So they have the 5N2, which is their network device. You know, you might want to look at a newer Drobo, which you'll get better results with as well.
Yeah, that's why we now use it just for backups. Originally, we were going to use it for server storage, Photoshop work, but its speed was just too slow. So now it's just used for backups.
Yeah, I use it as a big, fast external hard drive. I love that. And then I use Synology NASs. And if you wanted to do this duplication, it does it automatically. The Synology software is very good. And you just have one at home, one at work. They're duplicates of each other. They synchronize, but because you have physical access to it, you can, the first time, copy all 3 terabytes right away over a long lunch.
Now, I did notice that Backblaze offered a Synology app. So if you do have a Synology, you can
add cloud to that. That's right.
And
if you're doing it from somewhere where, you know, if it's at home in your closet and it's just trickling it up, you know, who cares if it takes 6 months?
Yeah, my boss wasn't happy when I told him it was going to take 3 months.
No, that's why you do physical backup initially, and you can do that, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you, Leo.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Backup, I love it when I hear IT guys and sysadmins and anybody who owns a business, when I hear them talk about backup, there's a few things you really need to do that nobody wants to do. It's like cleaning the bathroom. You just have to do it. And you know, it's fun to play with all the apps you've got on your system. But at some point, you need to think about updates and backups. Updates and backups. Updates and backups. All that stuff is so important. But the good news is, in most cases, if you set it up properly, and any good sysadmin, by the way, knows this, you spend time up front to get it done right and let it and automatically, and then you don't have to spend a lot of time thinking about it. You check it periodically. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. The Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up in just a few minutes with his gadget of the week. But meanwhile, let's go to Bill in Louisiana, who's been hanging on for a while. Hi, Bill. Thanks for your patience.
Hello, Leo. I'm so glad to speak to you. I've been listening to you since Screensavers also.
Oh, nice. I think really pretty much that's the only people who still listen. But anyway, welcome.
Chromecast. I really enjoy it whenever it's working right. But in the past 2.5 to 3 months, it started something. Now, it's also about the time I think Google did a major update on stuff or whatever. I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. I've unplugged it 2 times.
You have the original Chromecast?
I don't know if it's original or not.
You've had it for a while? Year or two?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the original. They've updated it considerably since then. What is it doing wrong?
Okay, the main thing is I've noticed that whenever I go to do my Chromecast, it'll pop up with its little square, and it says mirroring, and I have no cue. In other words, whenever I go to YouTube to watch...
Yeah, you don't want it to mirror. The idea for Chromecast is to hand it off. And then the device that you started with is the remote control, and the Chromecast is doing all the work. Mirroring merely means I'm taking whatever's on your screen.
Right, right, which I can see that. But I can't get it off. I can't get it to go back.
Hang on, I got to take a break. I don't know why your Chromecast is stuck, but maybe I can help you off the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Dick DiBartolo coming up next. The case of the stuck Chromecast. So you're saying it starts mirroring, but you can't turn it off.
In other words, whenever I go to get cast to come up, it automatically shows mirroring.
Yeah.
And I cannot, I've gone to the internet.
Are you doing it from the browser? Where are you starting the Chromecast from? Your browser?
From Chrome.
Okay, that's your browser. So the Chromecast is not really designed to do that. That's always been a kind of flaky. What the Chromecast is designed to do is you launch Netflix on your phone or your computer and then use the Netflix app, the Chromecast button in the Netflix app, and you say to the Chromecast, okay, take it from here. You continue to use your phone normally. You could even turn it off and Netflix would play on your TV because the Chromecast is doing the work. You're doing something else. Whenever you're using Chrome to Chromecast, it's always mirroring because that's the only way Chrome can do it. What are you playing from Chrome? YouTube?
Yeah.
Use the YouTube app instead.
Now what, Leo, going back, before this happened, I was using the Chrome fine. I had no problem with using Chromecast in Chrome.
Yeah, but it's not the way they want you to do it. It's not the way it's intended. In fact, I don't know if they still do it, but for a long time they said Chromecast in Chrome is beta, very beta. So the best way to play, are you doing this from a phone or a computer?
From a computer. Let me tell you one more thing. Another thing that happens is, like, let's say I'm watching YouTube on it. You know, I have to go to full screen to watch it. I can't go anywhere else. All right. It also, if I want to go to something else on my computer after I've gone to full screen, I can go there. But what happens is the audio signal degrades to the point where it's almost useless, the audio signal.
Yeah. One more time. That's because you're not doing it the way you're supposed to. You're not supposed to use the Chrome toolbar to Chromecast. You're supposed to do it from YouTube. Now, when you launch YouTube's player, so you're watching a YouTube video, right? You launch the
play,
and then the player comes up. In the player interface, there's a button. That will do the proper handoff. What you're doing is not how it's supposed to be done. You're mirroring your Chrome browser window. And, of course, it's not going to give you great results. That's why Google doesn't want you to do that. So they let you do it. But that's so that you can, I don't know, so you can do things that, because not every app supports Chromecast, so that way you could play an app back in your browser and you could watch it on your TV, but it's far from optimal. Much better results if you launch the YouTube player and hit the Chromecast button inside the player.
Fantastic. I appreciate it.
Okay. Take care. Thanks. Yeah, and most of the time, I think really what Google intends the Chromecast to be used with is not a computer, but a mobile device, because then you would launch the YouTube app. You would do it from the YouTube app. And you could turn your phone off because you want the handoff. When you're mirroring, as you're doing, there's no handoff. All Chromecast is doing is sitting there saying, okay, give me data, give me data, give me data, give me data. And your computer's doing all the work. What you want to have happen is the handoff so that the Chromecast then connects to the Wi-Fi, connects to YouTube or Netflix or whatever. It does all the work. You could turn the initiating device off. You could shut your computer down. It would keep playing. You can't do that with mirroring Chrome. Yeah, and this is part of the problem that Chromecast. Man, look at Dickie D. He's just doing the Dickie D dance. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I can't help it. I got the DJ in me. I still talk up every vocal. I don't know why that is. Dick DiBartolo is Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and we call him the Gizwiz because not only is he a humorist. Do you ever call yourself a humorist?
Never.
No. Do you ever call yourself a humidor?
Yes, that's okay. Strangely. Yeah, now you got it.
That's because you store cigars in your pants. I understand. No, he's a humorist.
That's what's in my pants. Okay.
It's a cigar. He's a humorist. In fact, you've got one of those awards that proves it.
Inkpot Award.
Your Inkpot Award.
Steven Spielberg and I got them the same year. Yeah. So
he's quite a well-known humorist, I understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dick joins us every week, not just to talk about humor and Mad Magazine, although that I always enjoy because I'm a big fan, but also about gadgets, because for years he's been collecting gizmos, and that's what made him the Gizmo Wizard, or as we call it, the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Gizwiz. Leo, how are you?
I'm great. I'm back from vacation.
I know. I was watching your photos.
A few too many croissants.
Was the food any good over there?
No, French food. It's terrible.
No, I told Lisa. I said, bring a lot of, snack bars and stuff, because the French are not known for their food.
Man, they kept feeding us sausages and cheeses and breads, and enough already. It's funny, though, and actually it's a little depressing. Paris is loaded with American fast food restaurants. On every corner, there's a McDonald's, and across the street, a Burger King, and across the street from that, a Steak and Shake, and across the street from that, a Five Guys Burgers and Fries. We're staying in a fancy downtown hotel in Paris across the street from a Five Guys.
Isn't it at least Le McDonald's?
No, and in fact, they're very popular. These places are jammed because people in France, they don't want to eat that French food. Oh. I don't blame them. They want Le Hamburger. So what do you got for us this week?
So while you were in France, I was in Las Vegas at Interbike 2017.
Wow, now I'm jealous.
Yeah, well, that is every conceivable kind of bike, every conceivable kind of accessory, and one of them was really neat. Electric bikes were all over the place, into the thousands, 4,000, 5,000. But then I came across...
I really want an electric bike.
Leo, do you have a bike you like now?
No.
Oh, too bad. Okay, because I was going to tell you how in 1 minute to make it an electric bike.
Oh, I have a regular bike, yeah.
Oh, yeah, regular bike, fine. Yeah. Okay. This thing is called the Geo Wheel.
Geo Wheel.
Geo Wheel is put together by engineers at SpaceX and Ford. And basically, you just replace the front wheel of your bike with the Geo Wheel. The motor and everything is built into the tire.
Wait a minute. Just the wheel? So your regular just bike, the wheel. You just put this wheel on your bike.
Exactly. And when you watch their video, only the tire spins. The rest of the wheel stands still. And that is your mud. And there's a little rotor there that's spinning.
Wait a minute. I don't understand. Only the tire spins. The rest of your wheel stands still.
Yes, exactly.
That is a sentence that doesn't make any sense. How does that happen?
Because just the tire is separate from the rest of the wheel.
Oh, so the Geo Wheel guts.
Is spinning the tire.
Is spinning the tire. Wow.
Yes.
And this will fit any bike?
It will fit 95% of all bikes. They make a 28, 29 inch wheel, and they make a smaller 26 inch wheel.
Now, I presume this is, it's not like a motorcycle. This is a pedal assist kind of thing, right?
Well, without any assist, 20 mile range on a full charge.
What? I want this. I'm going to buy this now.
Well, this is not inexpensive.
Well, an electric bike's
Well, what's
not.
Your guess? What's your guess?
Well, an electric bike, a good electric bike is going to cost you $1,500 to $2,000 or more.
Well, this is
$5,000, $6,000 sometimes.
Yeah,
how much is
one
this?
Of the nicest I saw was $4,995.
Yes, that's a good deal. Yeah. That's cheaper, and especially if you really like your bike.
No, absolutely. The guy said if you feel like pedaling with pedal assist, then you can go 50 miles on one charge.
Most electric bikes, really, that's it. They help you get up a hill or something. It's not – you still pedal. I don't want to get – yeah.
So you just flip your wheel off. You take this Geo Wheel. You put it back on the frame, tighten it down.
What?
And they say in 30 seconds to a minute – because everything's in the wheel.
How does it know you're pedaling?
You know, I'm not sure.
It must have some.
It comes with a little click-on dashboard, okay, which is your throttle and the LEDs.
And then you charge it up? You plug it in and charge
it? Yes, exactly. You can either slip the battery out and take it with you, or it
comes with plug-in. One of my concerns is this is going to make the front of your bike really heavy.
I did not
ask.
Did
you ride it?
No, I didn't, because it was in the convention hall.
Oh, yeah.
But I was talking to the guy, and the guy said, they're putting them on wheelchairs, people who have
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I thought it was very inventive, and I only saw it running in their video, and it comes with this little clip-on dashboard, which the LEDs will tell you what the wheel is doing, and then that is your throttle there. It's very clever.
I like it.
Especially if you have a bike that you really like.
Yeah, I do.
There you go.
And I also feel guilty about riding an electric bike, like I'm being lazy. So this would be like a compromise.
It's a compromise. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Does it work on training wheels?
Now, there you go.
I haven't learned how to ride it yet. I'm just
right.
You know. So this
is good for your exercise bike, Leo, because you could just set it for an hour
and then go watch TV.
Get some French food.
Yeah.
Come back and
have
say,
some more
okay.
croissants. Yeah. GEOO.com. GEO. Or you might say GEO. But they say GEO.
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 For GEO Orbital is the name of the company.
GEO. Very nice. Dick is at his website. If you want to know more about this, he's got a link there at gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.biz. Click the link that says the Gizwiz visits the tech guy. Yeah. No, I'm just telling him how to find the info on the bike. Yeah, but you're right. As long as you're there, you might as well play the game. What the heck is it? Where he gives you a close-up of a gizmo and you identify it. There's 12 autographed Mad magazines for the right answer. 24 for the wrong answer. So you can figure that out. but participate, because we got another month on this one?
Yes, to the end of October.
Okay. Autographed copy of Mad Magazine could be yours. Offer prohibited in states where it's not illegal, and do it tomorrow.
Employees of Twit are allowed to play.
I've never won, but that's okay. Thank you, Dick. We'll talk again next week.
Okay, buddy. Take care. See you next week.
Gizwiz.biz, our site, our show, our podcast. What is this? This is a radio show, Leo. The radio show. I'm a little jet lagged. Did I mention that? It's the middle of the night for me right now. Our radio show today brought to you by those good folks at Carbonite Online Backup. You heard me talking earlier. After you decide to back up, that's the most important decision. My data matters. Back it up, right? That's really important. The second most important thing, though, is to think about what happens if I lose the backups, right? If I just back up to a hard drive next to my computer and there's a fire, then what happens? Or, much more likely, if I back up to the hard drive next to my computer and I get ransomware, the ransomware is going to encrypt the backup. Then what happens? That's why you need Carbonite. Carbonite takes your data, puts it somewhere safe, away from your office, away from your business, where it's impervious to acts of God, human error, and, of course, ransomware. Go to Carbonite.com. You can read all about it. They've got plans for home or office, Mac or PC. And all you have to do is pick a plan that's right for you, for your home or your business. I use it both places. And then try it. But if you do, use my name Leo as the offer code. And the only reason I say that is it's completely self-serving, so they'll know they heard it here, that you heard it here, and they'll buy more advertising. No, that's not the only reason. The other reason is you'll get 2 months free if you decide to buy. So it's a win-win all around. Carbonite.com. Give it a try today. Make this the weekend where you finally do something about protecting your most important asset. Go with the data protection experts. Carbonite.com. Don't forget to use my name, Leo. Hey, I want to thank Kim Schaffer, who has been doing a great job all day. She'll be back tomorrow answering your calls, putting them on the air, grooming you for your personal appearance on national radio. Thanks also to Michael Cozio, who is holding down the fort back at the Satellite Operations Center there. He's our musical director playing the discs. And, of course, most importantly, I want to thank you for joining us. It was great to be back. I missed you. And I'll be back again next time. I hope you will, too, for the Tech Guy Show. Don't forget our website, all the links, all the information, everything I talk about available for free,
techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Sorry about that, Joe. I just had to... All right, here we go. Joe from Alabama. Hi, Joe. Oh, wait a minute. Now I can do it. Hi, Joe. Are you there? Oh, I pushed the wrong button here, too. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
There, it worked. Technology, I'll never understand it.
I'm sorry about the late call.
Not at all. What can I do for you?
I've been watching you since the original Screensavers like everybody else for years.
Isn't that funny? I hope that that's not the only people who listen to this show. But it does seem to be so. Very, very common. Well, it was a good show. I'm very proud of the old Screensaver show. I'm very proud of it.
Well, one thing I was going to tell you, you're one of the reasons why I got into photography.
Oh, nice. My favorite hobby. Yeah.
Yeah. I used the Nikon P900.
Oh, wow.
And I do photography all over Alabama.
What do you like to take pictures of?
Anything. That's why I don't stay on one subject. I like varieties of subjects.
Yeah, that's sensible.
And I got a Facebook page. Facebook page. It's Eyes of Alabama Photography.
Nice. So it's facebook.com/Eyes of Alabama Photography?
Yeah.
I'm typing it in right now.
But I was going to tell you that before I got to my question.
Yeah. What can I do for you? I'm just checking.
Well, the one problem I'm having, I have a Samsung stereo receiver Blu-ray player, and I connect it to my TV to get the TV sound for the speakers. I use the optical cable, toss link, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
But the little door broke off the back of it. It won't stay connected.
Oh. It falls out.
Is there anything that I can replace or adapter?
So it's one of those toss link connectors. So it's got a little, you see a little door with little red light coming out around the edges.
Yeah.
And then the cable is keyed, so you can only put it in a special way. It's got a little bump on it. You put it in like that. And you're saying that it had the door, but now it doesn't have a door at all, and the cable just falls out.
Right.
I didn't realize how important that door was.
I guess so. I mean, I can wiggle it around and it'll stay for a few seconds, but that's about it.
I guess you could tape it in or something. That'd be ugly, but... Huh. I don't think... So the broken door is on the Samsung or on the TV?
The Samsung.
Okay.
I don't know if you knew any...
I'm waiting to see the chat room is going to come up with a solution, because I... Now, you did take the rubber tip off the end of the optical cable. Obviously, it wouldn't have worked if you hadn't.
Right.
Yeah, that's one thing they're asking. The other thing they're saying is scotch tape. I think what you're really asking, reasonably, is there a way to replace the connector, that little cable? And I don't
think... the connector or maybe an optical AV.
I see. Yeah, you say I'm not going to use that at all. So what other output? Really, the best way to do it in general would be HDMI. Does your TV have HDMI?
The TV does, but that was another thing I couldn't figure out. But I can go into settings on the Samsung and turn on the HDMI audio.
So you'd that's what you'd want, because normally that's the best way to get audio in. It's still digital, just like the optical cable. But because it's on the same cable, you know, it's timed better. So I normally what you do if you have HDMI on the Samsung, which I know you do, no Blu-ray player doesn't, and you have HDMI on your TV, that would be the best solution. You wouldn't need the optical cable at all.
But one has out and one has in. One of them won't work with the other way.
You mean there are two HDMI ports on your Samsung?
Well, there's only one on the Samsung.
There's two on the TV.
Sir?
Where are you seeing in and out?
I think...
You said that there's... So there's one port on your Samsung. That's... By the way, HDMI can be two-way, so the concept of an in or out isn't really that important.
Okay.
If the Samsung has two HDMI ports, one in and one out, what it's intended to do is it's intended to have some other HDMI device come into it. But I don't have a Samsung Blu-ray player, but I don't think that's very common. So is there just one HDMI port on your Blu-ray player?
Yeah, just one.
Just one. And on your TV, there may be multiple ports because, you know, you might have other HDMI devices. But if you choose HDMI 1 on your TV, you plug your Samsung into that and you choose the input for HDMI 1, you should get audio and video from the Samsung just fine.
Okay.
And that would be a better way to do it anyway.
All right.
Otherwise, crazy glue. No, I'm just kidding. Don't use crazy glue. Don't use crazy glue. All right?
I appreciate it. Yeah, hey. You can take a look at my Facebook page if you don't mind.
Yeah, tell me again. Because I tried it. It's Eyes of Alabama Photography.
Right.
E-Y-E-S?
E-Y-E-S, Eyes of Alabama Photography.
I am. Maybe I'm mistyping it. A-L-A-B-A-M-A-P-H-O-T... Facebook.com/Eyes of Alabama Photography says it's not available. Let me just do a search. How about I do that? That should work. There it is. That popped up right away. Eyes of Alabama Photography. There's the page. You know what? Just so for future reference, if you give it out, it's Facebook.com/Joe Paul Cates Photography.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's so I was typing in, but if you do a search for Eyes of Alabama, that's great. Well, so it's nice to meet you.
And I'm going to look at
these beautiful pictures. And this is with your Nikon.
Some of them are with the Nikon P900. I also have a Nikon D5800.
Wow. You get some beautiful skies in Alabama. I can see you like taking pictures of sunsets. That's gorgeous. Yeah, that is gorgeous. Very nice. Well, it's nice to meet you, Joe.
You too. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.